I invite you to stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll.
Mr. Thomas?
Yeah.
Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular council meeting of February 15, 2016. Are there any corrections? If not, may have a motion and a second for approval.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Are there any corrections to the agenda?
Mayor, I'd like to remove B4316 from the consent agenda. Place that under old business.
B what one?
B4315.
4316.
Yes.
And Mayor?
Okay.
I need to recuse myself from discussion on report 18-16 due to a conflict of interest.
We need a motion on that, right? I move to allow council person Nauzer to recuse herself on that report.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Other changes to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I would like to pull B3316 from the consent agenda.
That will go to old business also. Any other changes? If not, may have a motion and a second to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We have offered several opportunities for public comment during the meeting. Each individual is entitled to 3 minutes, and there is a clock right in front of the dais, and I'll ask you to respect the time constraints so that everybody has a chance to speak. If you are the representative of an organization or group that's primarily involved in the issue at hand, you may ask for and will be granted 5 minutes. I'll invite Finance Director John Blattle to the podium. I'm going to read a resolution of appreciation to our finance director, John Blattle. This is a resolution signed by all 7 members of the City Council of the City of Columbia. Whereas John Blattle began his employment at the City of Columbia on May 12, 2008 as internal auditor and was promoted to finance director on February 14, 2011, and whereas Mr. Blattle will retire from employment with the City of Columbia on March 11, 2016, after almost 8 years of dedicated and honorable service to the benefit of all Columbia citizens, and whereas Mr. Blattle has maintained the highest standards of professionalism and personal conduct, and whereas it is the desire of the Mayor and Council to recognize and thank Mr. Blattle for his outstanding public service and assistance to this and former City Councils. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council extends its heartfelt thanks to Mr. Blattle for his dedicated public service and his commitment to keeping Columbia a viable city. We wish Mr. Blattle much joy, happiness, and good health in his retirement. I'll invite to the podium Finance Director Designate Michelle Nix, City Clerk Sheila Amin, and City Manager Mike Mathis.
I, Michelle L. Nix,
do solemnly swear
that I possess all qualifications
for the office of Director of Finance
for the City of Columbia, Missouri,
that I am not subject
That I'm not subject
to any of the disqualifications
set forth in the charter
of the City of Columbia.
That I will support the Constitution
and laws of the United States
and the state of Missouri
and the charter and ordinances
of the City of Columbia,
and I will faithfully discharge
the duties of my office.
So help me God.
Thank you.
I'll invite Mr. Ed Scavone, Chair of the Finance Advisory and Audit Committee, to come forward and speak.
Thank you. Good evening. The auditing standards recommend that the City's Finance Advisory Committee deliver the City's audit report to the City Council, which is the purpose of my presentation this evening. The Finance and Advisory Committee met February 19th with the external audit firm of RSM, previously known as McGladrey, and Finance Director John Blattle. John opened the meeting by providing an overview of the city's financial condition and answered questions from the various members of the committee. John pointed out this was the seventh year of RSM McGladrey's has serving as the city's external auditor, so one more year on that contract with that audit firm. Audit partner Kevin Smith with RSM gave a presentation regarding the audit process and the results of the audit, including the following 3 points. Number one, certain required communications are required by the ICPA standards to be presented regarding the scope of the audit. The audit was conducted using professional government auditing standards. The audit standards have been developed to provide reasonable, not absolute assurance, that misstatements are detected. Number three, internal controls were considered in planning the audit. However, the audit does not include examining the effectiveness of all internal controls. Mr. Smith discussed various accounting policies and significant transactions outlined in the notes to the financial statements. None of the transactions noted were material or unusual as defined under the professional standards. The auditors are required to disclose any adjustments to the financial statements that are proposed as a result of the audit. No adjustments were required. Additionally, there were no disagreements between the city management and the auditors over the application of significant accounting principles. Mr. Smith discussed the four audit products documents, the first one being the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, what we call the CAFR. The audit provided unqualified, clean opinion, which is what we want. Number two, single audit report, which is a review of the federal funds received by the city. The city complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements described in the U.S. Office of Management and Budget Circular. Number three, the passenger facility audit, which is the airport. The audit is conducted to meet the FAA's requirements and noted no funding findings regarding compliance or internal control. So, again, clean. And then finally, the management report was the last audit product. The management letter contained no findings. So, again, tribute to the staff and Mr. Blattle and his team. Of course, Mr. Blattle was well-versed in all aspects of the city's financial reporting, which has been his standard. The audit firm appeared competent and provided a good level of communications to Mr. Blattle and his staff. The Finance Committee, again, would also like to thank Mr. Blattle for his years of service to the committee. He's been a huge resource to the citizens in that role. And that concludes my remarks.
If I might just add one thing, I've been in the business about 20 years. This is the cleanest audit I've ever seen. And that's a great tribute to John and his staff for running an incredibly tight ship when it comes to the finances of the city.
Thank you, Mr. Scavone, for your expertise and your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to the council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. I will yield 5 minutes to John Clark, who I believe is speaking for Grace Vega. Is that correct?
Good evening. My name is John Clark. I live at 403 North 9th Street. And Grace couldn't be here tonight, so I'm standing in for her to talk a bit about community policing. This is a topic of great interest to our group, Race Matters Friends. And specifically, I'm going to elaborate in some comments that I made probably earlier, but in comments of counsel. I believe, and I believe Race Matters believes, that our community has a right to decide the kind of policing that it wants, and that it is not the role of the police to decide what kind of policing to provide. This kind of deciding would affect the mission, the goals, the vision of the police department, allocation of resources, strategic planning, policies and procedures, training guidelines, our efforts at recruitment. This is a broad, broad scope notion. When we're thinking about this, since we do not have anything like that right now, I was very disturbed when I heard earlier this year the police department's response to the president's 21st century police strategy planning thing. The police department has worked very hard to do a good job to protect us. But their response that night was all about the CPD and virtually nothing about citizen input, et cetera. It was very much in the line of, we know what's best, we've got the right idea, we're doing it right. And in the process, there was quite often a reference to, if we're going to do community policing, really we have to look to the time when we have the funding to hire more officers, maybe 30 or 40, and the training for them. And in the meantime, we can kind of just barely make do. We have our three areas that have been designed, and we have two officers assigned specifically in those areas for this. And of course, that's a step in the right direction of having officers in areas and stay in them and get to know people. But that's not what community policing is about as we see it. And it's certainly not about the police department deciding for us the kind of policing we had. It's also not just for the council to kind of approve their kind of requests for this. If you want to build trust, and of course, as you remember, under the Community Violence Task Force report, a whole part of the focus was the necessity for the police department, and actually the city in general, to build trust with citizens. You're going to have to direct the police department actually to be involved in working with citizens, not just developing and asking for some input and coming back and then saying it's okay. And some people believe that actually if they do that and it comes to the council, that's community input. I don't think so. I believe that community policing, it's a philosophy, it's an approach to really involve the community, and its core base requires an equally shared decision-making authority over these range of things that we've talked about. Now, when we basically recited the Pledge of Allegiance, the last two lines of that is liberty and justice for all. It really is going to take this kind of community policing based on this kind of broad-based shared authority. And we're not going to get there incrementally. And we don't have to wait until we have the funding for 30 or 40 officers. In particular, you know, some time ago, the city hired this firm to come in and teach the police how to do strategic planning. I talked to the people who were there. It was too early, but it is time for us, for you, to direct and enable the police department to do a long-term, this may take 12 to 15 months, community-based strategic planning process using outside facilitation to design the process. This kind of thing will build and increase trust in our public officials and our officers. We can do that now. We can do it within our budget. We do not have to wait for 30 to 40 officers. And this is the kind of thing that will build the support for eventual funding for more officers and more training. I hope you will take this to heart. We're not interested in the police telling us what kind of policing we should have as the way of getting to a strategic plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. I'll yield 5 minutes to Rhonda Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. I appreciate you letting me be here, and I'm just basically going to call this my public service announcement for the Building Construction Codes Commission. What I have before you is basically paraphrased out of your documents. The group that meets on the building codes every 3 years, which isn't up for any first read or anything, and what I put up, this is just what I grabbed out of my husband's truck. There are three more books that go with it that stack this high. The city spells out that these are professionals. They do not spend their free time working on the building codes. According to John Simon, they spend almost 30 meetings on the building codes. It's not free time. It's what most people would call billable time. It's stuff they could be doing, earning a living, and they take it very seriously. Most of the time, they only meet once a month to hear appeals to the building codes. Every 3 years, they go through the building codes. I've listed out all of the codes that they go through down here: the electrical, the plumbing, the mechanical, the fire, the one and two family dwelling codes, the energy codes, and the rental property maintenance codes. Every single one of these groups meets with, discusses, sometimes disagrees, sometimes agrees. The only one we cannot seem, and I say we as I'm speaking through my husband and in speaking with John Simon, they cannot get direct input from in the Building Codes Commission is the energy code. They have to work through that on their own, which is fine, but they would really like to have direct input from the energy code, and that would be the Environment and Energy Commission. And it has been independently reviewed by the Environment and Energy Commission and then sent to council. And so that's why, since these are professionals that they work in this business, it would be very helpful if they would work directly with the Building Construction Codes Commission and work together instead of every 3 years separately make recommendations to council instead of working together with the commission so that they could come up with something I think would be less adversarial, let me put it that way. And that's all I have to say. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Carlson.
Thank you.
I'll yield 5 minutes to Jeff Stack.
Good evening. Thanks to begin with for, well, I've been a longtime Columbia resident for decades now. First, I want to thank the council for the hard work you all do. You don't get paid enough, and I wish there was more that you got paid so we could expand the number of people who could actually serve on the council as well. But I do appreciate all that you do. Well, tonight I come to the council. I'm thankful, but I'm also really saddened and frustrated. The evolution of our city government has been really incredible from my perspective as far as caring for the homeless brothers and sisters in our community. About 20 years ago, I remember when some city officials, none of you folks here and none of the folks who are in the crowd that I've noticed, actually advocated for trying to shut down some of the shelters in our town. Nothing like that is going on now, and I so appreciate that. I really appreciate the support the city has shown over these last years in supporting Room at the Inn, providing cots, providing police to help there as well. And I'm really thrilled that the city has committed these funds to try to help make, provide this, purchase this land for a shelter eventually, started by the Columbia Alliance to combat homelessness. A lot of wonderful things are happening. In this last year, of course, five churches stepped up, Fairview United Methodist, Broadway Christian, First Presbyterian, Missouri United Methodist Church, all five churches offering this life-saving shelter to folks who are in desperate situations. So really thrilled about that. Last year, we knew that more than 400 people volunteered to help make Room at the Inn happen. This year, we don't know yet how many have. There's just no doubt that it's been a life-saving situation to have that operate for about 3 months. You know, years before Ratty began Room at the Inn, there was a period of time where probably several dozen or a couple dozen people had passed during the winter from exposure. This, you know, we know one person died this last winter, but not because I couldn't get to Ratty, maybe. You know, but the reality is, why I'm saddened is Thursday, the shelter closed. So suddenly there are 50 men and women or more suddenly without a place to stay. And we as a people need to do more in this city, and we can do more. We have to stretch ourselves further. You know, to not do so is really to be derelict in our collective duty to humanity, I believe. And, you know, life is the most precious of all human rights enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. No shelter and no life. So it's really so basic as that. Last year, 189 people were served in the shelter while during the course of an average of about 10 days. You know, we know the thing is, what's really sad to me is that the number of homeless people is, of course, increasing dramatically as well as economic times become more desperate and difficult. According to data, the number had nearly tripled over the last 7 years, the number of homeless people. You know, we have mild weather right now, and I appreciate that, but the next several nights we're going to have a lot of rain. You know, what are folks going to do? It's a difficult situation. You know, we think about the individuals and who they are. Many of us, hundreds of us, are just a step of misfortune away from being homeless ourselves, perhaps. One young man I thought of, he had an eye injury from, he was working in his place about 50 miles away and had injury to his iris. He needed to come into town and get care on a regular basis. He lost his job in the process and then lost his place to live. You know, that's the situation for so many different people. We have spaces available. You know, that's the thing. I encourage the city to be an active leader to provide shelter. You know, one of the community centers in town, we have this space, of course, you know, after we close and leave here this evening. This could be a space. The Arc could be a space. You know, we can make room at the Armory to make use, get people off the streets. It's just so basic that we need to provide this. We shouldn't also have shelters, you know, have everything centered in the north central neighborhood. It's not fair to the people there. We need to spread it out some to try to show our commitment as a people to provide for the most basic of all human needs for folks in our community in dire straits. I know that there are some empty office buildings as well, like there's one over on Chapel Hill just near Forum Boulevard. It's been empty for a couple years now. And we need to be more creative, and we can be. And I And I look forward, I know that, for instance, Ian and Mike, I know you'll be working on this effort to try to help veterans who are homeless, and that's commendable. We've made great strides in that. Well, we need to replicate that kind of effort to try to end homelessness for all men and women in our community. Let's have a homeless shelter in the downtown area. Let's make it something we're proud of, not ashamed and pushed off into a certain district, you know, where we have folks segregated who are needing these different services. I'd love for us to try to be who we want to be. Let our better natures help lead us in efforts moving ahead. Again, I really appreciate your time and your service, and thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Stack. We'll move to the public hearings. Please read PH 8-16 and B40-16.
PH 8-16 is the construction of improvements to the historic Maplewood Home building located in Nifong Park. B40-16 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct improvements to the historic Maplewood Home building located in Nifong Park, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that a portion of the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids to the purchasing division, determining that a portion of the project shall be done by city employees, providing for payment for the improvement, appropriating funds, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you. Public Works conducted a detailed building survey of the historic Maplewood home and identified at least $120,000 in needed improvements. The structural foundation work will be bid through the purchasing division, with all other improvements to be completed using the city's term and supply contract to save on costs. $150,000 was allocated from the FY 2014 city surplus funds for these improvements. In addition, the city was awarded a grant in the amount of $32,400 from the Department of the Interior Historic Preservation Fund, which will be used for needed improvements to the interior of the home. The work is scheduled to begin this spring and is expected to be completed in September. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from council? I'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to speak? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Discussion by council. I'll start by saying that Nifong Park is a very important part of our park system, and it's part of our legacy. Lavinia Lenore and Frank Nifong married and lived at Maplewood, and her family was influential in establishing Lenore Manor, and Frank Nifong was a physician who contributed to Boone Hospital. In fact, funded an addition in the mid-50s at Boone Hospital. So their historic legacy is very important. One of the things that I want to point out, and I think one of the things that I think is probably frustrating to all of us on the council, is when we take possession of a historic structure, and it doesn't matter really whether it's Maplewood or the Blind Boone home. It's pretty easy to take possession of it and treat it like it's, a pipe. You know, it just sits there. When these things are, obviously, people who have homes understand that a home is, it takes maintenance and repair. It needs to be in a budget every year. And if you don't, you end up with $180,000 worth of fixes. So I'm going to obviously support this funding, but I would urge future councils and future administrators to really, there probably ought to be a line item in a budget about maintenance and repair of structures like Blind Boone and Maplewood.
Well. Yeah, just a couple of comments to piggyback on the mayor's comments. This is something I think that we can heartily agree on. In terms of city properties, we don't have too many. These are kind of two exceptions, this being one of them, the Nifong House, and you mentioned Blind Boone as well. I would even extend that further beyond the necessity for a maintenance budgets, along with the kinds of properties that we own in holding in trust for the rest of the community. We also ought to consider those kinds of budgetary measures when it comes to infrastructure as well, whether it comes to sewer and road infrastructure and factor in some of the maintenance there. I mean, I don't mean to give any sticker shock to anyone, but often when we deal with capital improvements, a sizable amount of that goes way beyond the capital improvements of building it has to do with when what you have built starts to wear out. And then we don't seem to have the monies to be able to catch up. We always have more needs than we have resources. That's also true with these buildings, but I think we can address it on a little bit smaller scale. We certainly do need to give regular attention to this, and I applaud the parks staff for taking this on, identifying some of these needs. I've said it before, I'll say it one more time, and that is one of the reasons why the Parks Department does such a good job is because they have a dedicated revenue stream with which to do that job. That's the kind of thing that you can deal with some of these maintenance issues, and we ought to extend that and use that philosophy across the board more often. So thanks for identifying those issues. I'm glad we can get on with this, and I'm happy to support it.
Anyone else?
Some brief comments. This measure, I think, shows the city's ongoing commitment to historic preservation. We're a lot more comfortable, and there are more legal options with carrots versus sticks, certainly owning their own resource, and it's a great asset out at the park. I do just want to point, I've made this point a couple of times, I'll make it again tonight. Similar amount of money of what we spent to restore the Blind Boone home. I've received no correspondence. I haven't read anything in Trib Talk. There's been no talk. When we did the Blind Boone home, they talked about the Blind Boondoggle. There's no clever names to insult, you know, this home. And it's the exact same thing we have, as the mayor said. We have a historical structure we're responsible for. It takes ongoing maintenance and repair. And when we've not done that, then we have to spend money to bring it up. And then we have to work towards a solution of ongoing maintenance and repair. So I just want to draw the community's attention to that we treat historical structures that were owned by African Americans very different than we treat historical structures that were owned by a rich white doctor. And I think that says something about our community that we need to look at. So I would offer the critics of the Blind Boone home to take a look at their heart, and where was the outrage about this house?
Very well said, Mr. Trapp.
Anyone else? Please call the roll on B40-16.
Council Bill 40-16, Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Mauser?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Gala?
Yes.
Please read B-3116.
Council Bill 3116 is an ordinance vacating the remainder of an east-west alleyway located within the block bounded by 6th Street, Locust Street, 7th Street, and Elm Street, directing the city clerk to have a copy of this ordinance recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
This is really a follow-up item. This ordinance actually vacates a public alley on University of Missouri property. And this was agreed to in the January 4 ordinance that approved an agreement, a property transfer agreement with the university. You do have an amendment sheet in front of you that adds some language that says at the end of the last paragraph, provided, however, the city shall retain a utility easement in such vacated alley for an existing electric line and fiber optic line. This ensures that there's access to the underground utilities that are in that alley. But on the surface, there's no physical alley present, so this really doesn't change anything functionally from what it is today.
Any questions?
Try to answer any questions.
Questions from council.
Tim, is there a particular right or a property that's being given up by the city in this vacation procedure?
It's half of an alley, meaning it runs half the length of the block. So there's an existing right of the city to establish an alley, meaning a public vehicle access, 15 feet wide, which is the historic width of alleys in the downtown. The east half of it was actually vacated in 1945 by the city council then. I don't know why the entire block wasn't addressed at that time, but I imagine the buildings that are there, or the building that's there now, wasn't there. But
and does it ever happen that when a public entity gives up a right like that, that there's compensation paid to the public entity?
Not typically. Not I've never heard of cities receiving compensation for vacating a public right-of-way. The whole just behind a vacation of public right-of-way is that the landowner, when the right-of-way is dedicated, retains basically the fee simple interest, and the public just has the right to use it for as long as that right-of-way exists, and then when it's no longer necessary for public use, it can be sought to be vacated, and once it's vacated, it returns back to the adjoining property owners. In this case, the university owns property on both sides, so it would go to the university.
Thank you.
But we would still have access to, you said, fiber optic and
that's
electric line?
Yeah, there's three-phase power underground. That's the city's utility interest, and then Mediacom has a fiber line. And we made those comments as part of the alley vacation review, and the university's representative said the university agrees to retain the easement rights.
So that means the university would not build directly on top of that, or?
Well, that might be an item that's addressed during the planning of the museum building. If there is an encroachment, normally the burden is on the person constructing the building or the party constructing the building to relocate utilities.
Okay, thank you.
Just a question, Tim. You may not know the answer to this, but with respect to the utilities that are in the ground, obviously three-phase power has been around for a while. It's part of what the city does. And you say there is a Mediacom optic line as well. That must have been a newer addition, and that it's certainly not any of the part of the city's fiber backbone. This was media. Was that done later? And I mean, do you have any idea?
I don't have any details other than the comment was made.
So it
when
exists.
We circulated this.
It exists.
And it is Mediacom's line.
So the process whenever right-of-way is vacated is that all of the utilities get contacted to determine if there are any facilities in that area that would prohibit a complete vacation, which is why you have the caveat to make sure that those easements are maintained for the utilities that were placed in the right-of-way. Because the utilities have the right to put facilities in the right-of-way.
We have an amendment sheet. I think we all have a copy of it. May I have a motion second to amend B-3116 for the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Would anyone from the public like to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to discussion. Let me say that $35 million worth of bonds have been sold. This is going to be a spectacular addition to the City of Columbia, an addition that many other cities would have been glad to have had the opportunity to do. And I will also point out that this is possible only because the City of Columbia donated land worth $5 million, in my view, as did the University of Missouri similarly donate land worth $5 million to make this Missouri State Historical Society a possibility. And I'm so pleased that we're a part of it.
Just that this is, I can't pass up the opportunity to suggest what kind of a real public-private partnership this is, and the benefits to the city can be extraordinary in terms of even economic development in this community. So this is although this is just a technical action right here, anything that we can do to make this happen as quickly as we can is certainly worthy of support.
Please call the roll.
Council Bill 3116 as amended. Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mauser?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Please read B3216.
Council Bill 3216 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement with Trans System Corporation for professional engineering services for the design and limited construction administration of the Shepherd Boulevard to Rollins Street East-West Trail Connection, Get About Columbia Project Phase B, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Yes, thank you. Staff is requesting authorization to enter into an agreement with Trans Systems Corporation for the design and limited construction administration of the Shepherd to Rollins Trail Connection. This will provide an important east-to-west connection from EMU campus and the downtown business district to neighborhoods to the east. The project consisted of two phases, with the first phase already completed, which entailed council authorization to enter into an agreement with Trans Systems on September 2nd, 2014, to complete a trail study to consider various alignments. An IP meeting was held on January 26, 2015, and a public hearing was held on March 16, 2015, with the results of the study. The alignment study and the consultant's report recommended option one as its best balances the environmental impacts, funding constraints, and generates reasonable mode shift potential. After the public hearing, council directed staff to proceed with plans and specifications for option one as amended to not include sidewalks on Southwood Drive and parts of Bluffdale Drive, and to pursue option three. The second phase of the project begins with the authorization of a second agreement with Trans System to design and provide, like I mentioned, the limited construction administration for option one only, as the Get About funds are allocated to previously approved projects. Option three will be pursued at a later date with possible parks and recreation funds. This agreement with Trans System is for a not to exceed amount of $152,870.37 and will be funded by the Get About funds. The estimated construction cost is approximately $917,700. Be happy to answer any questions.
Let me ask a question here because it seems as though issues come back repetitively to the council and public has an opportunity to speak. It's fair to say that you are asking simply to fund engineering services.
That's correct.
It's fair to say that we've had multiple interested parties meetings, that we've had multiple public hearings in the selection of the trail route, and it's the council can do whatever it wants, but the intent of this is not to relitigate which of the options that we choose. We've already gone through that process.
That's correct. You directed staff to proceed with option one and to take the second phase to go to design services with that.
And this funds will come from the non-motorized transportation grant, which is the federal grant that we started with $22 million. So it's federal money that's funding our trail system.
Yes, it's 100%. There's no match.
Any other questions from council?
Yeah, I have a couple. So my understanding is that this is the engineer. I mean, these are the engineers that are going to survey where this trail goes.
That's correct.
Because, you know, someone brought up that there's some historic tree, some old tree that I guess has a rope swing on it, and that this is going to go right through that. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure the engineers could probably go 5 feet one way or the other. So are they supposed to look at this? They're not just going to go in and, I mean, are we going to then take a look at it? And I don't mean to have another public hearing about it, but just take a look at where it actually goes, and that this will actually go south of the hay barn and away from the Raptor Center. I mean, this is
a conceptual alignment, so detailed alignment will come after a detailed survey.
That's the detail, right?
and so this was walked with some council people, and this was a general alignment that seemed to satisfy the mode shift and the environmental constraints and those considerations. So what you see is conceptual. A detail will come out once we enter into engineering design, because we have a lot of constraints that we have to work under with the federal grant.
And that's what we're asking the engineers to do, and that's what we're approving funds for.
Correct.
Okay.
In the agreement is very specific with the steps that they need to take and preliminary engineering. Those type of considerations are all made a part of that design.
This also says something about limited construction.
administration. What they do is what we have, when you're using federal funds, you have to have that in the contract because the staff will do the day-to-day inspection, but we do not have the expertise to do shop drawing review of the bridge, the bridge itself. So we'll retain this firm to give us the expertise that we need to in the bridge design, and then taking the shop drawing type details, and then they'll approve those as an extension of our services.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one, Dave. It was my recollection in whenever it was March of last year that the council instructed staff to proceed with both options one and option three.
Yes, and at this point we have funding with all the other commitments of option one, and we have made discussions with Parks, and I've got a letter in to the university considering option three, and that's something that we're going to look at just
as a separate project.
As a separate project.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Hello, everyone. I'm Sue Tuforte, and I'm very lucky to be standing here. You spend so much time this last year on what I, while I was sick 3 weeks ago, reading, I picked up, I was given this, I refer to this as the machine, Mayor McDavid. It's incredible what your city has, our city has put together. Every single detail of this plan, I was astounded at the kind of work that has happened. I'm representing, it's our wild nature, so I'd like to request a additional 2 minutes, Mayor McDavid.
I'll yield it to you. I don't believe you're a primarily impacted more than anybody else, but I would ask you to be concise and to the point. Thank you.
I know you don't want to revisit any other option, but it was my understanding. Could you please start it? We put together a slideshow of what the area looks like now. All right. As you're walking, this is the east side coming down to the Hinkson Creek. This bluff is 300 million years old. This is going back upstream. And as Councilwoman Peters mentioned, here is the famous tree with the rope swing. This is what it looks like in the autumn. When it is as it is, here's a picture of one of our performers. I thought I'd take you on a two-minute walk with us. We were just there last week. It's absolutely beautiful. It's very, very quiet. This is the floodplain on the other side. It would be very difficult to put a trail through. It's a sponge. And here it is in the spring and the summer. It's stunning. It's beautiful. And to put a cement bike road through it destroys it. We are interested in protecting the wild areas of Columbia, the wilder. This is on the Missouri campus side, which we were able to walk with the Get About people. It's stunning. It's beautiful. It keeps the campus healthy. It keeps that side of the creek healthy. There are mules here. You can see the barn. And it was a beautiful sunny day. Here's one of our star performers here. So we were told 3 years ago that this would be replanted. This is the Moon Valley construction. Our hearts were broken. Many of the residents here in this area saw how the destruction of this trail, this is no longer native, it's no longer natural. It's been interrupted with so much excavation. So many trees had to be taken down to put these giant bridges in. And we were told we won't make these mistakes again. I really beg you to look once more. Can we not, as citizens of Columbia, residents of Columbia, can we not work with you? There is so much at stake here. This is a precious area. You can turn, well, I was so impressed with the technicality that you all, the detail that you look into. We know things that you don't know. We want to share that with you. We have been left in the dark. We did not know about these so-called public meetings that you all were having. Last March, we gave us a report of 5 years of going door to door to what did people want in our neighborhoods. And the majority of them wanted to leave the area the way it is and improve the existing route on Old 63 up through Stadium, that would be a wonderful gateway into Columbia and a very adequate trail to campus. This area is precious to us, to open that, and so many people and the native species who live there. I have pages of quotes from Jane Goodall and from Pope Francis on how we are destroying our earth. Our earth is our mother. You know that. I bless every church that you go to. But this is our church. This is our responsibility to take care of, not to keep chopping away at. I hate to tell you this, that people refer to these trails on the east side as the rich white people's trails. This $152,000 could be used to analyze and make a survey of areas in town that really need help for their walking and their biking. And I'd like to lastly pose a question. Is it ethical that a city council person who has been the former president of PedNet has a vote on the decision going forward of making these trails? I thank you for your time. The It's Our Wild Nature and several citizens here in Columbia would like to work closely with you on the future. We propose going back to option 4. Thank you so much for your time, and you have... I owe you 5 seconds. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barbara Wren from 615 Bluffdale Drive. And there's one thing that I am not understanding. When the council voted for option 1 and the pursuit of option 3, if there were funds available, that only was to the creek on the east side of the bank. The west side project that you're voting on tonight was to be determined later, and we were told there would be public meetings for that, and it would be a Parks and Rec project, not a Get About project. All of a sudden, the plans have changed, and it's been incorporated into option 1 as plan A and plan B, and I don't believe that that is what council voted on last year. I'm asking you to vote no on this proposal to spend the $152,000. I sincerely hope the council will reconsider using these funds on looking back at option 4 again, possibly, as this will be something that's necessary in the future. There needs to be safe passage on Stadium Boulevard. Option 4 is a less expensive option, leaving money for other projects, and achieves the desired mode shift of the original survey, using taxpayer money wisely. The plan that you're asked to vote on tonight does not support the original mode shift study from Shepherd to Rollins. It's no longer the Shepherd to Rollins trail plan. The route is no longer designated from Shepherd Boulevard to the Bluffdale connector or from the MU parking lot to the intersection of Williams and Rollins as it's described to you tonight. The connectivity for pedestrians and wheelchair users has been removed. Instead of being from Shepherd, now the trail is only designated from the Bluffdale cul-de-sac to a parking lot on the MU campus. So this is not what option 1 was even designed to be originally. The city staff says they will need, people will have to figure out on their own how to get from Shepherd to the connections or from campus to the connections. What they've basically done is cut out the hills that are impossible for the ADA community to navigate. As it goes from the cul-de-sac on Bluffdale to a reserved parking lot at MU, This is deceptive to the ADA community because it ignores the parts of the route that make it impossible for wheelchairs and physically challenged pedestrians. The chosen route is only designed for bikers and pedestrians in top physical condition. I don't know, when I was in college and I was in a lot better shape than I am now, I had to park in that parking lot. And if it was raining or snowing, it was almost impossible to walk up that hill. And that was when I was in good physical shape. But for a wheelchair or a person with a walker to try to navigate up that street without...
Ma'am, your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just ask staff a question? What Barb said about option one not connecting all the way up to Rollins, was that correct from what we discussed in March 2015?
We can make that connection if the funds are available. It will not be ADA because it will, the sidewalk will follow the road grade.
What Barb said was that the option one we voted on only went to the east side of the Hinkson Creek.
I don't recommend that.
It went over the creek and it went up to the Rollins parking lot.
That's what I thought.
It just included the bridge.
No, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Went to the Rollins parking lot.
Alice Turner, 1204 Fieldcrest, and my neighbors on Bluffdale have inspired me to speak briefly. I say neighbors because I feel like this bike trail makes us all neighbors. A few years ago, was opposed to paving our trails. But since then, I'm somewhat disabled, at least till I have elective surgery. And I have a fold-up Trek that has very thin wheels. And my paved pedway is wonderful. I can go on that when I can't go on the rest of the trail. I primarily use our trail for exercise. I'm in my 60s, I need exercise. And I'm not much of a walker or hiker at this point. So I support trails like this that are paved. It does take me to nature, it will take me to the trail, it will take me closer to this neighborhood. So I just wanted to put in a word. I've totally changed my mind on paving. It is cheaper and it is easier for some of us who are considered disabled. Thank you.
Thank you.
Being Honorable Mayor and City Council, I want to start off by thanking you for your time to listen to the opinions and concerns of us as citizens. I know that these late evenings are incredible sacrifices, and I sincerely thank you for the good that you do for this city. My comments tonight are very simple. Our city is very, very blessed with this get about federal funding, and I believe that we need to use it in the best possible way. That's fantastic. I use the trails myself quite a bit. I don't think anyone's saying that we don't need trails. The problem is we have existing infrastructure in this specific way. We have the stadium bridge. Option four would have caught a lot of cost. And this great amount of money that the stadium bridge using this existing infrastructure would do, we could divert that towards where adequate and safe bike trails are seriously lacking. Living in Third Ward and bordering on Second Ward, I see very little ways to get into the heart of the city. It seems much of the money has been diverted into the economically rich and well-off areas of West Side and the downtown. And by bike trail, I don't mean a little white strip of white paint that separates me and the car by a few inches. No, it's nigh impossible for a biker coming from the Clark Lane area to get downtown without serious risk. And where I live, near the Boone County Fairgrounds, the most feasible way to get downtown is biking down the dilapidated and cracking sidewalks of Route B with cars zooming upwards of 45 miles per hour. If we want mode shift, if we want people getting off of their cars and onto their bikes, if we want citizens to have the opportunity to attend amazing cultural, educational, and athletics events across the community, then I sincerely ask you to direct the money to the northern wards of 2 and 3. I ask that you divert these funds from this fiscally wasteful project. Again, the infrastructure, in my opinion, is already there. And while it's not in the most ideal situation as it is right now, there are definite workarounds, such as the previously tabled option 4, which would build a cement, from what I understand, would build a road guard between the stadium, automobile traffic, and bikers. So again, I thank you for your time and ask that you consider moving these funds to areas that need legitimate ways of getting into the heart of the city. Thank you for your time.
Hello, I'm Ginger Owen. I live in Columbia, Missouri, connecting people that walk in wheelchairs and on bicycles to access.
Can you give your address, please?
Pardon me?
Can you give your address, please?
5775 East Heller Road. The proposal on today's agenda is a revised version of Option 1 that takes a different path from the original concept approved. The reason, I understand, is Clyde Wilson Park didn't want a concrete road built through the park. East Campus community didn't want it. And MU didn't want it to interfere with their Cincinnati Raptor Center and the Mule Barns. That plan has changed to recreational trailheads. One at the bottom of the Rollins Road, too steep and dangerous for the students that a stairway was built to access them to campus from that parking lot. The other at the end of the Bluffdale Drive cul-de-sac, allowing the access to the trailhead again at the discretion of the commuters. Well, the majority, as you know, citizens of the Hinkson Valley community have adamantly expressed, we don't want it either. See the survey. It appears the city manager and this council isn't listening to them. With all the problems in this city, increased crime, shootings, not enough police to address all these issues, this will open up these neighborhoods to these increased growing problems. For crying out loud, put lights up for safety for the residents of East Campus. Repair and build sidewalks to the existing trails. Install lots of lighted crosswalks. We obviously need them. We had one killed today. Use these monies for the ones that need that safety net and not the few that want a faster way to campus. This is not mode shift, it's favoritism. So we have revised option 4, connecting the Shepherd Boulevard to William Street. Option 4 uses the existing pedway on 063 and Stadium, already paid for by the Gadabout funds, improves the bridge over the Hinkson Creek to safely accommodate commuters of all modes, continues onto the pedway on Ashland Road, not ending there, but turning onto East Campus Drive, then veering onto the East Campus Loop, just straight behind the very wide drive behind the School of Veterinary Medicine, and coming out straight onto William Street, completing the connection. No parking lots needed. This is the greatest safety application anyone that travels Stadium Boulevard could have. It creates mode shift for the commuters east of the Hinkson Creek Bridge, virtually no environmental impact, less property acquisition, and the best option financially for the use of non-motorized transportation. And finally, I agree, as past president and member of the PetNet Coalition, I'm asking Ian Thomas to abstain from voting on all issues of the Getabout Funds issue, because I believe his vote is biased and also a conflict of interest. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michelle Windmiller, 705 East Rock Creek Drive. I'm here representing the PedNet Coalition tonight. Annette Triplett and Lawrence Simonson are actually in Washington, D.C., talking about our legislators this week about non-motorized transportation. So we have several members of the PedNet Executive Committee and the board here tonight. We did not call on our large number of membership to come in because, like you, we feel like this issue was already discussed. We came out, we went to meetings, we got lots of opinions. But we do want to make sure that council understands that we definitely support the funding for the study to go forward. We want to see what the study returns. We think it'll be very positive and will show a positive way to move forward with this trail option. Just a few things that were brought up. This trail does connect downtown to east, and as we know, that connects all the way up now because of all the trails to the east side of town, and will even connect up north when the trail opens up that goes under I-70. What I thought was interesting was that this is a beautiful, pristine area, but only a few people can get into it. And we believe in opening up nature and the trails to everyone, no matter where they live, no matter what their financial circumstances are. So we definitely would not call this a rich person's activity. We believe that holding people out of nature is not socially equitable. And option 4, which we already know before, we absolutely do not support It does not show mode shift, which the getabout funds are specifically for mode shift, and it's been stated that that will not create mode shift. So we definitely do not support option four. Thank you.
My name is David David Luthold, and I live at 2000 Valley View Road, and substantial footage of my property adjoins that of the Altus property, which is part of the property being considered here. I rise in support of this proposition and urge you to go ahead with it. I've lived at this address for 33 years, and for 10 years while I was employed by the University of Missouri, I walked to work every day, crossing Hinkson Creek, sometimes getting wet, oftentimes getting somewhat wet there as we crossed. And it was one of the highlights of my day to be able to walk to work and to walk home. It was one of the reasons that I purchased the property where I am now, because of that opportunity. I favor extending that opportunity to a fair number of other people, and especially the bridge, which will allow people to get across the creek without getting wet. I think that it is a good plan. I think that if you go ahead with this plan, that it will enhance the value of my property, because I believe that there are people, a lot of people like me, who would like to live in a place where they could walk to work or bicycle to work, and who would be employed by the university. Part of the reason that this property is accessible right now to people who at least live in that area is because my neighbor, Gerald Newfer, has mowed trails there now for more than 40 years on that, and has kept that open as a possibility for people to be, even though, and this is part of the plan originally. Clyde Shepherd, who originally owned this property and for whom Shepherd Boulevard is named, had the idea that he would give the property to the city as a park. The city declined at that time because they wanted to put in a sewer. So then, after his death, then the neighbors went together, and they collected about $170,000 among them to buy the property with the intent of giving it to the city as a park. But they were outbid by a secret bidder. And so then Dr. Newfer started mowing the lawn and mowing the trails there and keeping track of it. I've helped him some on that, but it is that has kept it open so that people can walk there, and a few people do enjoy walking it. I think it should be expanded considerably, the number of people who do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'd like to make a statement concerning the last speaker. If he has been down in
please
that
give,
area...
Please give your name and address.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. I will. My name is Brian Johnstone. I'm a resident and homeowner living on 711 Bluffdale Drive. The gentleman that spoke formerly mentioned the idea of walking across the creek and getting his feet wet. Well, I want to let him know now that there's actually a large tree across the creek that makes dry accessibility going both ways. And I hadn't even written that down here, so I messed up already. I live on Bluffdale Drive with my wife, Michelle, and her brother, Jesse. We are avid walkers and enjoy primarily walking on a natural trail that parallels Hinkson Creek, which this trail goes right through our backyard. I must also say that this activity is particularly pleasing to our two dogs. The trail is frequented by many of our neighbors. I enjoy watching neighborhood children playing along the path and exploring the depth and breadth of the creek. I love the natural wooded area that offers tranquil space for rest and relaxing activities. Natural areas should be treasured and preserved. Because I appreciate natural areas, I have joined with fellow advocates for preservation of natural areas. This activity has occasioned opportunities to share my concerns with City Council members. I have noted problems with issues of transparency and fair notice for events. A primary area of concern is around the practice of the Council submitting proposals that are fluid and transitory. A proposal may be approved initially and later changed without notice in a manner that is detrimental to the community needs. An example of this is revealed in current activities of the City Council addressing the Bluffdale to campus getabout. The approved first option plan was decided by the City Council and has been changed substantially as route of the trail is different from information provided during earlier consideration of the construction options. The option also appears to have added a parking lot to it at the end of the Bluffdale access point. I believe that plans that clearly represent the motive and intention of council actions should be shared with the community in a timely manner. If a plan is being changed substantially, community input should be requested prior to implementation. One last note on this issue, plans should have ready funding sources. There should not be any tentative resources for funding. Lastly, I am addressing the council's desire to rush into the failure and overdevelopment of our trails program.
Sir, you've run over your time, so could you please wrap quickly?
Our current level of trails are more than adequate. They're a resource that I frequently use. I believe that our community is best served by using funding that's available to maintain management of the trails and to upgrade trails to better suit the needs of our special needs folks on wheelchairs and walkers. Thank you.
A quick question for staff. Dave, has the route of option one changed substantially since last year, and has a parking lot been added at Bluffdale?
Everything's concept, but I haven't noticed any changes from what we brought to the public hearing or the last meeting. So, but there's nothing been decided on. This is just to get a consultant to start working out the details of the trail location.
Thank you.
Hello. You saw me last year about this time. I was a little bit nervous. I'm not so nervous now. I would like to address the plight of the pedestrians in this town.
Name and address, please.
Oh, Nellie Owen. I'm a Boone County resident. I'm north of Hallsville. I decided that it's easy for me to talk about your trails and ADA compliancy that has to be followed with the Federal Highway Administration through the Getabout Funds. I chose to do one of your trails, and unfortunately Ward 3 is not even considered as a survey spot that you turned in. So I visit a lady that's, I'm like, let's go do this. She's in a walker, I'm in a wheelchair, we're gonna go to the store, and she lives over off Keene Street. So first thing we do is we get on the street, there's a trail right down there. She of course goes to St. Charles because that's the shortest route. She has to cross St. Charles. She crosses the 63 bridge. I don't plan on being the first wheelchair person to get killed on any of those roads to prove a point. So it was like, okay, there's a trail down at the end here. Get my car. I've got to drive a car up there so I can get on your trail so I can go to the store with my friend. Okay, the trail is fabulous. It's wonderful. Me, I surprised myself. I didn't know I was strong enough to do this trail. But just to get to the trail, the connectivity for a person in a wheelchair to get to that trail, you go over large chunks of rock. You go through the trail. You come out behind on the south side of Broadway, right there where Applebee's is. Cool. We've got a sidewalk there. My God, the sidewalk is too steep for me to do by myself. We get up to the top of the sidewalk. There's glass all over that sidewalk. I'm a sinfully independent person. Somebody's got to scrape the glass off there. And in order for me to get across Broadway, this is just one incident. I've got to cross back over, and I've got to go west. I've got to push a button. I've got to wait till the traffic stops. I have 22 seconds to get across six lanes. And in the meantime, I see a young lady over on the other side. No traffic is paying attention to this young lady who has 22 seconds to get across the street. So, okay, fine and dandy. I can deal with that. The best route for a person in a wheelchair to go to that shopping center is to go up Broadway. But no, I have to go up that steep sidewalk, cross another street that has no markings to get to Hy-Vee. My question is, get-about funds are supposed to be federal highway money. If you do not make this place wheelchair accessible, ADA compliant, you are running into a lot of trouble. And you're going to, and the trails are for recreation. I can get to the trail. Where's the connectivity? Where is the connectivity to get from one point to another? You need to consider that before you do anything. I can't make it up that hill at the vet school. I can't make it down and up that hill at Bluffdale. So you need to consider your ADA compliancy before you consider all this 30-mile bicycle trail. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
To show you what Nellie went through. Now, this was a GoPro on her head, and the first obstacle you can see there was the sidewalk that she did get over, but it was an obstacle. Then we go across here, heading towards St. Charles, yeah, we're heading towards St. Charles, and she gets just so far, she has to turn around. And you'll see a few pictures of the sidewalk, and there, this is what it looks like, where the sidewalk connects to the street, it connects to St. Charles there. So she had to go back and get her car, and this is the people with the walker and us going down. Now here she is trying to get to the trail after she finally drove down there. See those rocks? That doesn't seem to be very ADA compliant to me. And perhaps some of the money that is being used could be used to fix this, to make it a little more compliant. Then we go on up the hill. Now, this is a pretty big hill, and it would be nice to have a bench up there because even if you're going on your way to the store, you might want to sit down for a minute, especially on your way back. And then this is the first road we had to cross here with no crosswalk. And then we get up to the this is crossing, that's what, Broadway. And this is Nellie's view of crossing. And there's no indicators to say, don't hit me. Looks like those people had a little accident there. Then we get, this is the corner, and then to cross west, to cross the Broadway. And this is the 22 seconds you get to get across Broadway. Yeah, and here comes the girl. She's got to dodge cars getting through.
Run to get across there.
Yeah. And then she gets across and then up the hill. Maybe some of the money. It's like you talk about upkeep. Maybe some of the money could be used for upkeep. Thank you.
Anyone else?
All right. My name is Lee Ruth. I live at 807 North Valley View Drive, and Hinkson Creek is in my extended backyard. And I'm focusing on something a little different. I'm focusing on some procedural issues for last year and this year. Last year, I attended a public presentation at Shepherd Boulevard School, where they presented the four options for this trail, which were to be voted on by the public. It was presented as a choice between the four options, and I heard and saw at that meeting no mention of combining them. Several days before the election, I went online and read all the public comments and was surprised to find that a number of people were supporting options one and three. Did they all arrive at this combined option independently, or was it a setup where some people who would support this combined option were advised that it was on the table, even though it wasn't officially so? So the Get About Columbia had a better shot at getting what they really wanted all along, which is combined options one and three, the two most expensive options. Jumping to the present, the only way I even knew about what's going down right now is because neighborhood activists were paying attention. We now have a revised option one, which is neither the original option one nor the combined options one and three precisely, but varies considerably from the option one for which the voters expressed a preference. Furthermore, it is being fast-tracked by council consideration of approval of $152,000 for a survey based on modified option one, which should perhaps be called option five. Is this a bait and switch thing? I don't know. Somebody knows. Stranger things have happened in this town. The council should at least table this until more of the public has had a chance to look at the details of option five, which I'm calling it, which the voters have not approved, and be made aware of the arguments for and against it. And it seems to me, I still got a minute left. Wow, how to do that? There's a considerable lack of transparency with the illusion of transparency with this whole process, both last year and before and this year, and that the decisions as to what's going to happen are still being made in behind closed doors. And I'd like to see everything open up a little bit more to where the public actually knows what's really going on. Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm Captain Robert Wilson, Navy retired, 30 years United States Navy, served around the world, was able to cycle. I'm also an avid cyclist and also a member of the National Brotherhood of Cyclists, which is a predominantly African-American organization. I'm here tonight to say that you've heard a lot of negative comments tonight, but PEDNET, and also I believe, and National Brotherhood of Cyclists believes, that this has a long-term benefits for the entire community. We talked about earlier trying to increase the number of minorities riding and also walking. Well, this is the one way of being able to do this. Again, expanding the network of the trails that we have here in Columbia. This is one of the reasons why I came here personally. I was in Okinawa, Japan, took a look at the website of the Columbia and noticed all the cycling trails that you have here. And I chose to come here after 27 years, and I came here and retired here at 30 years. Let's continue with the benefits for the whole entire community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I am Jerry Newford, professor, retired professor of the University of Missouri in genetics since 1992, and I've been working free for the university since then, and it's a lot of fun. I live on the hill overlooking all this land. I bought that in 1957 from Mr. Clyde Shepherd, and he sold it to me for $2,600 and loaned me the money to do that, and he loaned me enough money to build a house. And for $16,000, I built a house there, and I've lived there and in the house next door ever since. I've mowed that trail because I didn't know whose property it was, but I decided I was going to treat it like it was mine, and maybe the owner would come and challenge me, but he never did. And I've watched that trail, and I know a lot about it. And that's a beautiful place down through there. I enjoy it. It's my Garden of Eden, and I'd like to see that the right thing happened. Mr. Shepherd had a vision of that, and I think Luthold told you about that, but that was all to be given to the city free to build a park. But the city wouldn't take it because they were going to build a sewage line. Not that they didn't want him to get in the way. But the sewage line is in there now, and so there's nothing to prevent that. The trouble is that ownership has gone from Mr. Shepherd, who would like to give it freely, to another party who may not want to sell it. That trail was Mr. Shepherd's vision, and he wanted to plan to have access on four sides there, one down on Stadium Boulevard, one over on Rollins Street, one down at Bluffdale Drive, and one up on the hill where that little park is. And they were all to be connected together and be a part of some vision he had of the future. But he didn't get to carry that out because he passed away before he could do that. The land came up for sale, for auction, and we tried to buy it to give it to the city, but somebody else bought it instead and decided it was more valuable than the $33,000 he paid for it. So if we had, every morning I go down to run down the lake, and I'm so glad from my home, which is just on the edge of there, on 63, and every morning I go down there, and it's wonderful to get off the roads and be able to go all the way over to Stevens Lake, except for that little bit of road down the hill. Now, it'd be so nice to have that trail go across over the university, which I used to do, and leave my boots beside the creek and hide them and go over this creek, to walk to work. It'd be so nice to have a bridge across there and to have that trail go into the heart of the university and be able to go down and connect to the trails to the south and to be able to go over to the people who live on the east side of Old 63. I'm very strongly in favor of building the trail there and of doing it the right way so that I couldn't hear this meeting really, but I saw those terrible pictures of how trails ought not to be, and so that would be so nice if we had a nice trail for the people to go in wheelchairs and go all those ways on the low ground and stuff, but climb the hill. And I used to run up around.
Doctor, your time is expired. Your time is expired. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, I'm in favor of the trail. And not number four, which will put us over the bridge.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. I merely want to thank all the disabled that have stood up, because I am one of those disabled, unaware of any of these issues. In future decision making, let's see if we can't incorporate the filming that was done by the lady volunteering to bring that before you all. The city itself could use a lot of filming to educate the councilman. What are we talking about? I am just totally shocked with the deterioration situation. When you're taught what empathy is, this lady was in dire trouble when she said, "I'm on my wheelchair running over these rough rocks." Well, now you got to see it. It wasn't just a few rocks. It was a bunch of them. And the other reason for using the filming is, I've always said, some of us learn visual and some of us learn auditorial. And now you've gotten a visual, and every bit of education is better than just taking it firsthand. So-and-so said such and such. No, you got to see the facts. Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Richard King, and I live at 109 West Parkway here in Columbia. And I want to thank all of you for your service to the city of Columbia. I am a president of the board of directors at PedNet, and I've been a member of that organization for well over 10 years. And sitting here listening to the testimony this evening, I'm getting a little bit frustrated by some of the things people are saying. There's accusations here that the city is changing the plans. There's accusations of under the table kind of dealings. I've been involved in this process from the very beginning. I've been to many of the meetings we've had. This has been publicized all over the city of Columbia, and I think everybody has had a chance to speak up. And if I'm not mistaken, you folks here at this council have voted on this already and made the decisions to move forward with these trails. So to hear this, some of these comments is, for me, is just very frustrating, and I just find them not to be true. So I urge you, and I am also representing PedNet. Annette and Lawrence are both in Washington, D.C., representing PedNet for the National Bicycle Week. But anyway, there's talk about money here, too. I understand what you mean about getting around Columbia in a wheelchair, and I run in this city and I bike in this city, and I do find areas which are frustrating. But you're talking about taking money for that are specifically designated, I believe, for these trails and going to city streets, and it's just not how it works, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong there. I'm sure the city has other resources and can find other resources. But I would really, really appreciate just the benefits the city of Columbia has received from these trails, to continue with these trails, and please vote to continue to get this project done. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? I'm going to close the public hearing. We'll go to council discussion.
I have a couple questions real quick. It's just regarding the last video that we saw with some of the problems that we had seen with the inability of the wheelchair to get across some of that gravel, request that park benches be put on their trails. I know the public can, I know through several organizations I belong to, make charitable contributions to the city to purchase park benches that go in many of our parks and along of our trails. I'm assuming that that program can be utilized for citizens to make charitable contributions to purchase more park benches for this portion of the trail.
Absolutely. We have a memorial and heritage bench program as well as a tree program. We utilize a lot of that for areas that are gapped. Along certain trails, like along that 63 area, we talked about a bench in some of that spots, but then it narrows that down that two wheelchairs couldn't pass then. Okay. And so that's why you don't see any along Old 63 as you go up that hill there.
Great. And then there was another question, too, about the length of span for people to get across with disabilities and then just regular pedestrians across that Broadway intersection with a timer. Can staff, I guess, that would be some MoDOT road, correct? So that's a MoDOT.
No, that'd be ours. But we can look into that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then I'm done with my questions. Thanks.
I'm going to start with the discussion. I suspect that you're not the most biased person on this council. I may be. Yes. I just spent 3 weeks, and I'm confident that I've ridden in more recreational bike trails in more cities over the last 3 weeks than anybody else in the city of Columbia. I am enthusiastic and will be delighted and excited to see options 1 and 3 completed. We went through a very long process to select these options, very public process. Option 1 will give university students direct access to the crown jewel of our park system, Stevens Park. Option 3 will connect Third Ward through Hominy Branch to the Grindstone Nature Area. And all the way to St. Charles, Missouri. It'll connect everybody living in South Columbia to Stevens Park. I think these are exciting parts of our trail heritage, and I will endorse the next round of funding for engineering services, and I can't wait to see this project completed.
Well, I agree with that, Bob. The funds for this are from the Non-Motorized Transportation Pilot Program, whose express purpose was to increase pedestrian, bicycle, and wheelchair accessibility mode share throughout the city. One major part of that strategy is our citywide network of trails. For economic and topographic reasons, our trail system follows the creek system. And if you look at a map of Columbia and look at all of the waterways, everything flows from the northeast kind of to the southwest with the Perchy. I'm doing it for my way around, so you'll have to reverse it. The Perchy down the west side and the Hinkson coming down the east and the south and meeting in the southwest. So our trail system does the same thing, because that minimizes the hills, that makes it easier to build all of the trails ADA compliant. It minimizes the road crossings, because the roads already cross the creeks on bridges. And then we tie in all of the neighborhoods, business districts, schools, other amenities, the University of Missouri, via connector trails that come down off the plateaus or off the ridges down to the creeks and where the trails, the main trunk trails, are running. It's exactly the same as the sewer system. It follows the exact same set of paths. So back in early part of last year, there was a very highly engaged community discussion about how to spend these funds in this particular area. And three options, and then a fourth was added, were presented and discussed. I never really agreed with the idea of calling them options. They don't do the same thing. They're four separate routes that can be built, bicycle-pedestrian connections, but they're not options that we choose this one or that one or the other one. The vast majority of the public that weighed in at the interested parties meeting out at Shepherd School and the council meeting here urged us to support both options 1 and 3. The reason for that is that options 1 and 3 are the ones that together connect Stevens Lake Park to Grindstone Nature Area along the Hinkson Valley. It's a missing link at the moment in our entire network of trails following creek corridors. At the moment, to get from Stevens Lake to Grindstone on a bike, you have to go over the Shepherd Hill, rise over 100 feet to the gas station at Shepherd Boulevard and back down again. There is a very nice pedway, we appreciate that, but it's a huge barrier for people moving throughout the city in on the trail system. So this, options 1 and 3, will complete that link. At the moment, we have funding for option 1. The council did recommend going ahead with both as the highest priority. And I would like to see options 2 and option 4 constructed as well eventually. Option 2 would connect from the bottom of the valley up to the point where Shepherd Boulevard meets Old Highway 63 and give good access for the Shepherd neighborhood people straight down to the trail. And option 4 would improve the sidewalk and bike lane on Stadium Boulevard. They're all important. But I'd say they're lower priority than 1 and 3, and that was what the council decided about a year ago. I do want to thank, I forget the lady who, what was your name, ma'am?
Nellie.
Thank you, Nellie, for bringing to our attention the very difficult issues with moving around the city. And that was on Broadway, kind of crossing at Trimble Road, was it? I will certainly follow up to see that we can make some improvements.
The place to cross is up there where there's no crosswalk at all.
Right. Well, that road is extremely wide, and I think we heard Dave Nichols say there may be some improvements we can do with the timing. There may be some ways we can bring in some bulb outs to shorten the distance that somebody on foot or in a wheelchair has to cross, and I would certainly support those efforts. I also would very much support preserving the Altis property and getting it back into getting it into public ownership if we can. It's something we've talked about as a council. It's something we've talked about with staff. Having the trail pass through there and then preserve the rest of that property as a natural wild area, I think, is completely consistent with all of our plans, and it'll be opened up to people from all over the city. So that really kind of concludes my points. I certainly support going ahead with the engineering study that staff has asked us to vote on for option 1 today.
I'll make a comment. Just a couple of things. I voted to support this back in March of 2015, and I will continue to support this project. I don't generally change my mind once I've made a decision, unless something egregious comes about that forces me to take a really hard look at the situation. And so what I just did a few moments ago is I went back and looked at the minutes from that meeting. And during that conclusion of the hearing on this issue, it stated that Council directed staff to proceed with the plans and specifications for option one as amended to not include sidewalks on Southwood Drive and parts of Bluffdale Drive. And when you look through the information that was provided during that council hearing, public hearing, the schematic showed option one going from Bluffdale Drive to Rollins. Now, once it crossed the creek over Hinkson, there was a purple area of potential area for where option A could go, which part of that did include what we see on the map currently. And then there was another portion of that plan that could potentially have gone up north of the Raptor Rehab. Well, it certainly doesn't make any sense to put a trail next to a Raptor Rehab. Seems to me to be very non-conducive to the rehabilitation of our hawks and vultures and such that have been injured. And so I can see the reasoning not put that trail up to the north part of the university. So the path that we see here for option one has not been changed. If you go back and look at the original March documentation for that public hearing, it shows from Bluffdale Drive to Rollins. And so I am going to continue to support, and I will support the engineering going forward.
Well, let me just make a couple of comments or more. And let's just start out with I'm just so glad that the controversy behind this is has not changed over the past 7 or 8 years that we started this. I saw Mayor Heineman in the audience. I remember when this first came up. I won't go into too much history, but just the idea of using some of these funds originally was around $23 million, $9 million of which was spent on advertising. I thought that was a bit excessive, but nonetheless, we had $13 million left, and we had prioritized all the projects, and there were a lot of projects that were prioritized at the time. Barbara Hoppe's on the City Council. One of the issues at that time had to do with this area because it was so much of a challenge, difficult. And don't get me wrong, I am a big fan of the former mayors when it comes to advocacy for the whole get about plan, the spokes and wheels and the trails and all the rest of that. It's really good stuff. And by the way, I'll even do a plug for the third ward trail that goes through Woodridge, and we're going to complete phase two, which is going to go under I-70, and that's going to connect to the Lynx Golf Course and Indian Hills and all the rest of it. And we will be able to avoid that isolation going all the way from Indian Hills to Stevens Lake Park in one fell swoop. That's all great stuff. But I'm going to model myself after the commendable consistency that Ms. Nauser has. And suggest to you that I was nervous about this in the first place in 2008, 2009. I still am to some degree, but I'm also a realist. And I got voted down, right, about a year ago with this in terms of the options. It's no secret that I was a proponent of option four. I thought it was a little bit less expensive alternative. We could have seen what that would bring. Ultimately, I suspect it would have been a challenge. We would have had to have done some of this. I don't know where that would have gone exactly. I think we do need this connection from 63 to the university. There was a picture in one of these movies of a building over there at the university. I worked for the School of Vet Medicine for about 10 years, so I know this area quite a bit, and it wasn't accessible. And by the way, with respect to crossing that creek and not getting wet, one of the problems I had with these options when they came before us, and I was in the minority on the City Council, had to do with the distinction between high water bridges and low water bridges. And I think the mayor and former mayor and I have had this argument before. But when we put Grindstone Trail in, we actually provided for some low water bridges. Low water bridges don't mean that you get wet, except maybe once or twice a year when the creek really is high. And there are even some ways that some of those bridges can shift to avoid some of the background material that gets stuck and so on. There's self-cleaning, and so there are issues with low. The reason that the high water bridges are preferred over low water bridges is because you don't have to deal with the Corps of Engineers. And when you anchor anything in the middle of the creek, then in fact you have to deal with a much more rigorous review process and so on. There is that natural crossing area between where the gentleman used to mow his property and the other side of the creek, and you can walk across it when the water is low. But a low water bridge would provide that. And I thought when we approved the grindstone trail that we were starting to consider some of those low water crossings to at least have some sort of compromise between the natural areas and providing for the trail and the bicyclists and so on and so forth. I will go back just one bit too. There, you know, in the controversy leading up to how difficult this particular piece was going to be, there was another option that we considered. It was supposed to be the very next option on the list after we tackled some of those projects. And it was a project with that Mr. Yanku and I agreed on. He was the city councilman, and he's there too. Everybody's here. I mean, this is like a reunion. Well, welcome. But we did it. We did note the importance of the potential for trail, and I would urge the entire council to move on this should we get another windfall of $5 million or something from the federal government. I hope we do. But it had to do with the Colt Railroad Trail, which is another trail that goes north and south between Bear Creek and all the rest of these things. Another avenue for this kind of mode shift for third and second ward, benefits two wards. That would be a relatively inexpensive trail. We wouldn't be dealing quite with the grades that you're talking about, trying to get up some of these hills and all the rest of it that are a real challenge. But that should be on the plan as well, I think, in the future. And, I'm very, very concerned about this access to trails piece, because we can build the trails and we can make them ADA compliant. Some of them have more grades than we'd like, and nothing is perfect. And there are some limitations, as Mr. King suggested, as to how much the monies that you can use to make these connections. But what good does it do you? I mean, if they're ADA compliant once you get there, and then you have to go by pack mule to get from the trail to a street, we have some real problems. And I know Mr. Thomas would join me in some of the sidewalks to nowhere that need to be connected, and the gravel basins and all the rest of this. So that's an issue that we really do need to pay attention to. But let's. The realist in me keeps coming back to this whole thing about this is a plan to execute professional engineering services. So this reminds me a lot of the transmission line, where we did the same thing, only in that case we reversed the decision, right? But in this case, I think it's probably wise to proceed with professional engineering to get more detail. But I would hope that those discussions would include the public so that we can assuage your fears of this moving target. It always moves to some degree because we haven't had the engineering plans to really know what's going on here. I think there is room for some compromises, and maybe those compromises include not only access to the trails to make them ADA compliant and more accessible. Maybe we can fashion some sort of compromise in that regard. But I would also hope that they would consider, without immediately in a knee-jerk reaction, move to a high-water bridge. There's a lot less damage done with a low-water bridge. I know it would involve more work with the Corps of Engineers and so on. Maybe that's an option that some of these folks will come back with. Again, I am a fan of these trails. I think it's done in terms of economic development in this town and for lots of other reasons. But I think there is a sensitive way to do it, and there is an insensitive way to do it. And just for the sake of completing the spokes on this wheel is not the way to do it.
I appreciate Mr. Scala's remarks. They echo my own thoughts that we didn't hear any new information today. We have an existing council decision, and I think that just as the power lines came up, that it's important to look at past council decisions and that we're an organization that changes membership, but we need to move through time. And most things come back to us around seven times or we have to vote on it. And when we start down a path and then we reject it, then we're open to a charge that we can't govern. And so I think that So I appreciate him moving his vote based upon, you know, the facts on the ground and the realists. He made an argument. It didn't persuade a majority of us. And then he's taken on that was the decision-making time. And this is really a continuation of that decision. And it makes sense. I hiked the area with the engineers. I think they're going to show as much sensitivity as they can to the topography. The city staff and the consulting engineers, you know, have a passion for nature and understanding of the complexities of trying to site the trail with the least disturbance to the possible. They're looking at to that level of specific trees and what they can do. I do recall, I can't remember the specifics, but there's some real limitations in regards to bridge placement. So I don't think it's a matter of just moving it a couple of feet. There's some outcroppings and some things, and they looked at, and we looked at trees, and they're really going to make their effort to avoid, you know, the best and the you know, the biggest trees. But the bridges are tough. And have walked the other area. Appreciate what you've done there. It is really, really lovely. And I think we're going to have more access and more people are going to appreciate that, the loveliness. We have looked at the Altus property, but it's expensive. And when we compare our limited amount of money for green space acquisition, you know, we've tended to prioritize projects that are going to get us a lot more bang for our buck as far as wilderness preservation. But it is an ethic that we hold, and we can't look at a specific property, but we have to look at them in all the context of all of the properties that are available. We have a great objective scoring system put together by the Greenbelt Land Trust that we consult with, and a great project between the state and the county and the city, and that nonprofit that focuses on really identifying. And so we look at developmental pressures, and we look at the environmental sensitivity, and we look at how it relates to the park master plan. We develop an objective scoring system. We can't go into the details about all of the projects because that hurts our negotiating position as we try to buy land. But we've moving forward on those projects that score the highest and that make the most sense to the city as a whole. I believe last meeting we moved forward on another area. So we are trying to be wise stewards. We continue to put a sizable amount of money into green space acquisition, which is a great city. The future is going to appreciate how much of what we've locked on in its present wild state. So I think this is a great trail project, and we made changes to it. So it was different than what was presented, but that was based upon a lot of the public comments of people who lived in the area. We dropped the Bluffdale sidewalk part, as that's a pretty quiet street, and we decided that not to put in that sidewalk, that it would still be pretty accessible down a pretty quiet street. So it was a reasonable decision then, it's a reasonable decision now, and I'm pleased to hear that a majority of council still continues to see it that way.
Anyone else?
Well, once again, I'm new to this conversation, but I'm inclined to support the decisions of the previous council, and also to just focus on the issue at hand, which is to authorize an agreement for professional engineering services, which is what we're voting on. So I'm inclined to support that.
I just have a couple comments because I think you guys have covered almost everything. I do appreciate our wild nature pointing out how nice that area is, and I do think that it would be helpful to be able to have more people come and be able to enjoy that area also. To the gentleman who thinks that we're fast-tracking this was last year that we voted on this, and I wasn't even on council then, and it sounds like we've been working on this for a number of years, so I don't feel like we're rushing through this, and it is just an engineering approval. It is $150,000, but we're asking the engineers to look at where the trail goes and whether we can actually put it where the university has donated trail, and can we get it across Hingston, and what is that going to entail? So I think it's worth spending the money to have professional engineers actually look at this. I agree that low water, high water bridges, these are the kinds of things we need to ask the engineers about. And we did have to wait to know exactly where option one went to see where the university was willing to let us go, because they are letting us go through their land to include, you know, to finish this trail. So They did spend a fair amount of time trying to decide exactly how close they wanted us to get to their mules or anything else. And finally, I do appreciate your head camera and looking at the trails. We should put you on a few more of those, and sort of brings to mind. Well, you know what? But it would give us an idea of what we need to fix. So I will be supporting this.
Please call the roll.
Council Bill 3216, Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Please read B3316.
Council Bill 3316 is an ordinance appropriating non-motorized transportation round two grant funds for capital projects and or activities and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you. In 2006, the City of Columbia received a federal grant in the amount of $22,435,421 to be used for non-motorized transportation projects and or activities. In 2011, the city was awarded round two funding in the amount of $5,929,975 for a total of $28,365,396. To date, $23,659.25 have been appropriated or budgeted to specific projects and activities. As the projects wind down and being in various stages of completion, staff is asking to appropriate $3.5 million in capital only to the non-motorized transportation capital project account for five remaining projects, and those include Hominy Trail Phase 2, Bike Boulevard from NKT to Parkade, County House Phase 2, Clark Lane West, and the Shepherd to Rollins Trail connection. The remaining balance of the $1.2 million is operational expenses, and that will be handled through the budget process. So basically what we're asking, when we set projects up in the budget process last year, we had a change in staff in our design. We did not get the appropriation set in with the projects. As we have moved forward to projects, the Hominy Trail, we did have a bid. We cannot award it until we appropriate the money. All the money is there from MoDOT's accounting. It's the city's process that we need to appropriate to the project. Usually it's done at the budget, in the budget cycle. We did not get that done at that time. So this is bringing the money forward so that we can continue with each phase of the five remaining. And some are ready to construct, some are still in design, some will be ready for right away. So this will allow us to push these projects further to completion, and then what's remaining will be done in the budget process this coming year. Be happy to answer your questions.
Yeah, I was one of the people who wanted, I think a lot of us wanted this pulled, but I'll start on this end. One of the questions was the $300,000 that's needed for the Shepherd to Rollins Trail connection. Since we were just discussing budgeting $150,000 for the west side, well, for option one, what is the other $150,000 going to be needed for, since it says design only?
We're just setting up the projects to add more money at the time. If we do move faster when we get to the east side, I think that we'll be needing some right-of-way acquisition. Currently in the project account, there's enough for the funding of the design, but we want to get set up so that if we move at a certain pace, then we'll have the money in the account, and I won't have to come back and have appropriation for each five projects, so we're wanting to do it one time here.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that answers my question. Thank you.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
I was rather confused when I...
Name and address, please.
Barbara Wren, 615 Bluffdale Drive. I was rather confused when I saw this issue following the one you just voted on, because it appears to me that you just voted to appropriate funds for something that now you're voting on to appropriate.
We already had funds in the project from a previous appropriation.
And this says that the $300,000 is for design?
No, it's for additional funds that we'll just add to the project. If we get to a stage where we can go into right-of-way negotiation, the money's there in the project.
Okay, is that what it says on the chart?
It's
I thought it said $300,000 for design.
That is what it says on the chart. So,
yeah.
So is that an error?
So I don't think you
the
can
design
use
process.
That for, I don't think you can use that for acquiring easements.
Well, it would be in that design process. We'll have to come forward with an easement acquisition ordinance, but this will take care of moving the $3.5 million into the account for all five projects.
Okay, so would it be an additional $300,000 on top of the $152,000, or is the $152,000 part of that money?
Well, total project, including construction, design, and right-of-way, is close to $1 million for this project.
But this says for design.
Correct.
And they just approved $152,000 for survey. That's for design. So
correct.
I'm wondering if the project is allocated, is it $300,000 or is it $450,000?
Oh, it's $152,000. The contract with the consultant is $152,000.
So then you're giving yourself $150,000 overage.
We're actually giving ourselves about a $300,000 buffer to work with.
It seems like that the council should have voted on that prior to the previous, because they really voted on something that hadn't been appropriated yet.
No, we currently have $153,726 in the project. We have enough to award the account, but we wanted to appropriate money to the project should any other expenses come available that we'd have the money in the project for.
Well, I was confused by that. I didn't understand.
So it's not, we didn't have the money before. We had the money. We just want to go ahead and appropriate this money now.
Thank you.
Hello. Nellie Owen, Boone County, north of Hallsville. Okay, Mr. King came up and spoke about the fact that the get-about funds were only allocated for nature trails. According to the Federal Highway Administration Non-Motorized Transportation Pilot Program, we have four cities. Columbia is the only city that has prioritized the bicycle routes in this town. The profile for investments for the non-motorized funds go to bike parking, on-street infrastructure, off-street infrastructure, both off and on-street, including sidewalk improvements and on-street bike lanes, outreach, education, marketing, and promoting walking and cycling. As you said, they spent $9 million on education. Okay, if you want to compare Columbia to Minneapolis, we have a population of 108,000. Minneapolis has a population of 382. For shared uses, we paid out for 13.2 miles of shared use lanes. Minneapolis, 2.9 miles. On-street miles, 70.8 miles for bicycle on-street miles. Minneapolis, 65.7. Bike Boulevard, we're a little low there. We only got 6.1 miles. Minneapolis, 27.8. On-street shared lanes, we had 44.4 miles, 10.9. Sidewalks and crosswalks, we were the lowest of all. We only put 2.1 miles in this city. And as far as square miles go, we had 53 square miles, Minneapolis 58.4 square miles. We have 2,047 people per square mile. Minneapolis had 65.51. This money is not only for recreational trails. This money is for Clyde Ruffin's ward to repair the sidewalks. This money is for Carl Scala's ward to repair the sidewalks, to make it possible for people, for the pedestrians. We've already got another dead pedestrian today because of the crosswalk. Granted, the bicycles are great, but let's look at our pedestrians. You know, Ward 3, which is where I went. I mean, it was horrible. Clyde Ruffin's ward. Look at your sidewalks. People in wheelchairs have got to use the bicycle lanes and then take their chances with their life. So Mr. King is right. He thinks this money is only going for our recreational trails, when in fact this is a non-motorized transportation pilot program. Do your homework. Check the other three pilot programs. They even it out between the pedestrians and the bicycles, and connectivity to the market, to the hospital, to the workplace. Recreational trails do not take me to the market. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll go to council discussion.
There are a few comments I'd like to make. I really brought this up, I wanted to take it off the consent agenda to allow a few folks. First of all, I was asked to do it, but there were also a few folks that I thought would want to testify. This kind of bolsters my argument about being very friendly to trails and so on. And I'll unashamedly take some credit for this in terms of the city's strategic plan and the notion of equity. We had a fight, I wouldn't call it a fight exactly. We had a lively discussion about capital improvement sales tax and where some of the monies were going to go for the next 10 years and so on. A large percentage, frankly, of the road budget went to a couple of really large projects, the bridge on Forum and the widening of Niphong. That was 51% of the road budget. Didn't leave much for a third ward, second ward, first ward, and a few others. So that was an equity issue. I just want to bring the attention of the public to this. This is part of that equity issue. We're talking about two trail phases here and a sidewalk and construction design. how many branch trail phase two and the Clark Lane West, that's $2.5 million out of this remaining money, which is a substantial chunk, and I think it speaks well for this realignment to some degree, however you can, to realign our notion of the strategic plan and equity. I also want to address the recent comments that I cut myself off. I'm thinking, wow, but I did that myself. At any rate, I wanted to make a few comments. Again, I don't want to go back too much in history, but St. Charles Road at one point or another in 2005, when we had the last capital improvement sales tax go-round, if you will, we just did the last one with this new road budget in 2015. But in 2005, one of the projects on that 2005 list was the improvement of St. Charles Road with shoulders and sidewalks and everything else. It was an expensive project, but it was one of the ones that was promised. Unfortunately, in 2005, the city did not get all it wanted for the capital improvement sales tax. It got the extension, which provided for about $80 million, but not the new tax, which was for another $25 million. And at that time, the city manager, Ray Beck, discussed the issue with the city council, and they chose to take some of the funding for some of those extra projects, frankly, that were in the third ward, and transfer them to other projects. Eventually, that a lot of that money was one of the projects that was tied up in the two Limon bridges over both forks of the Grindstone Creek, despite some of the objections that Barbara Hoppe and I made for improvements to New Haven Road, which would have provided another access to Limon Boulevard anyway. But at any rate, that the bridges probably were a $9 million project, which is approximately what it would have cost to take care of St. Charles Road. So I feel for St. Charles. I was out canvassing recently on St. Charles Road, and you take your life in your own hands. And I wish we could have at least the same kinds of improvements to St. Charles Road that we do now on Clark Lane and eventually we'll get on Ballinger. Enough of my soapbox about that. But I do appreciate this dedication to some of the trails that are necessary in the third ward here that will make access much more readily available to ADA and provide some contact rather than the isolation that some of us have felt all the way out on Clark Lane and Ballinger for a long, long period of time.
Anyone else? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 3316, Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Strapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes. Yes.
Please read B4316.
Council Bill 4316 is an ordinance accepting a Stop Violence Against Women Act VAWA grant from the Missouri Department of Public Safety, authorizing an award of contract and certified assurances and special conditions, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall be become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
Sorry.
That, please.
I didn't understand your question.
Report.
I'm Barbara Buck. I'm a lieutenant with Columbia Police Department. I am over the domestic violence unit.
This grant we've had for several years helps fund two full-time detectives and a part-time civilian detective, or civilian. We use this grant to collaborate in the community with prosecutors, probation, parole, victim advocates, and others, and we feel that it has an impact on the lives of domestic violence victims in helping them to live a healthier life free from violence. Does anyone have any questions regarding this?
I have questions. Could you talk a little bit about the coordinated community response? You mentioned others, specifically about batter intervention providers and how that work is coordinated.
They meet on a regular basis. They're doing it quarterly now, where they get together, all the groups I've just named, with batter intervention program specialists to discuss policies, overall approach to domestic violence. It's a very complex issue that doesn't take just one of those areas I mentioned. It takes everybody working together. The batter intervention program is important in that we're doing something to treat the offenders of domestic violence so that they can change their ways and live a healthier, nonviolent lifestyle.
So how was the decision made to reduce the number of meetings?
My understanding was that that used to be monthly. It went to quarterly. Most of these people have been working, these groups have been working together for 15 to 20 years. They do have a bi-monthly meeting that is just law enforcement and prosecutor that's case specific. They're now starting a bi-monthly group where these groups get together to do a brown bag lunch, to network, to talk about issues, particularly related to domestic violence. I wasn't in that meeting, however, I realized that there were several people, one of which was invited, was a batter intervention specialist.
Okay, I think that's all the questions I have at this time.
Any other questions from council? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Council discussion?
Oh, yeah, come on up to the mic.
Oh, okay.
Hello. Hi. My name is Tasca Tolson. I'm with TMT Consulting. I am a batter intervention provider here in Columbia, Missouri. I'm the newest agency in town, and I've been struggling with getting connections in order to find guidance in providing these services. I think these services are really important because if we don't have batterers, then we're not going to have victims. Education is really important on our end as well as far as us getting that training and having access to that STOP grants, because a lot of our clients are in a place where they can't even afford to go to their groups. So if you have individuals who are trying to take care of their business and their probation requirements, it's really hard if they don't have access to that funding. And I want people that's trained well as so that they can provide those services also. So I just want to make sure that we are, as a community, reaching out to these individuals and making sure there's funding available for everybody who wants to participate and mentorship that goes on so that we can all help each other.
Any Thank
questions
you.
For me?
No.
Okay, Thank you. Council discussion. Please call the roll.
I'm going to make some remarks. I'm a big believer in coordinated community response. There's really two main ways that it's done in communities that have it, and we're lucky that we have it. And this is actually the more modest approach of bringing together batter intervention, domestic violence, survivor services, the police, probation, and parole to kind of coordinate their efforts. There's also, in other communities, there's an even larger coordination that brings in health providers that is more sweeping in scope as far as their coordination activities to address it, because it's a pernicious activity. It drives a lot of violence. In our community, you just can look through the arrest page, or if you have any dealings with we have two full-time officers plus additional staff just for domestic violence cases. It's really one of the huge drivers of social disruption in our community. So I met Ms. Tolson right after she began her business, located on the business loop. And she came to speak to me in my role as she had reached out to a staff person of mine about coordinating with Phoenix Health Programs. And Chris Haynes, my former staff member recommended that she speak with me as the executive director because I have a I used to work in the field and batter intervention, and my first job in Columbia was case manager at what became True North, the domestic violence shelter, and have worked in other communities for many years in the domestic violence field. When I met Ms. Tolson, I found out that she was Duluth trained. There's only one acceptable model to address batter intervention. It's a power and control model. It's really the only thing that's been found to address the issue nearly as well as jail, which is still sends a message and addresses things. There are other methods that are, in fact, not only not helpful but actually harmful, anger management approaches, for example, that can feed into the excuse-making cycle. So there's a strict accountability. It's difficult work. And Ms. Tolson had became the first certified program in Columbia. When she told me that what she had done, I asked if she had reached out to the Dove unit, because I understand through this grant comes up every year as a new batter intervention provider, I thought it was important that she coordinate her efforts with the other batter intervention providers in town, the shelter, the police, and the probation through this grant-funded program that the city has. And then I was surprised that there was, for at least from my own appearance and Ms. Tolson's experience, that there was less welcoming and less engagement than what I had anticipated. It was many, many years ago when I was somewhat involved in the Dove unit. I did batter intervention for Family Counseling Center for a couple of years, and there was a much higher level of coordination than what appears to be occurring now. Now, even though the city grant covers staffs and officers, part of the grant application, if you read it, and it's worth reading, It specifically lists Family Counseling Center, but does not make mention to TMT Consulting, even though it provides a similar service. Now, for full disclosure, I ended up doing some consulting work with TMT Consulting, because to get fully trained, she had to work with someone who has had the requisite experience and training to do that. And her other competition was the only one besides myself in the community. So I did some work with Ms. Tolson over the summer, and I've also done some contract with her as Phoenix Health Programs. So I know from firsthand experience she runs an excellent program, as does Family Counseling Center. So it's not a question. I just want to make sure that we are really embracing the idea of coordinated community response, which means that all of the players need to be at the table and we need to involve those. So it would be my expectation that as we put forward the 2017-2018 grant, that we were going to update that to include everybody who's in the community that's providing that service. If we only have some providers at the table and others that we don't, then we reach the thing where some batterers have greater level of accountability than others because they're not at the table to coordinate and staff those particular cases and ensure that the victims are kept safe and that the offender is held strictly accountable for their actions. To do that, as you can read through the period, then we need that full community coordination. I think this could be a start. I think we can do more. I've brought this up in years past, that we can bring in broader coalitions. You know, does University Hospital do a direct inquiry about domestic violence? Is that done at other social service providers? We do a good job at Phoenix Health Programs, but that's only because I came out of the field. If you get too far from domestic violence specific work, you find that people don't do a very good job of addressing it. It's an uncomfortable topic that we prefer to sweep under the rug. So often when this grant comes forward, I use that as I have my soapboxes too, Mr. Scollin. One of them is a robust response to domestic violence, which costs people's lives on a daily basis across the nation and is a scourge upon our community and needs all of our concerted efforts to keep our eyes open, to address these issues thoughtfully and with compassion and also with strict accountability. And I think we can do better. We've done better in the past, and if the grant requirement has required less meetings, that's no reason not to pull these meetings together. So I can't tell staff what to do, but I would encourage everyone involved with this to continue to put forward their best efforts to bring everybody to the table and to make sure that that information gets shared, not at the minimum required to maintain a grant, but at the maximum allowed based upon our resources to serve the people of the community well. I plan to support this measure joyfully.
Please call the roll.
Council Bill 4316, Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 3416, 3516, 3616, 3716, 3816, 3916, 4116, 4142, 16, 44, 16, 45, 16, 46, 16, 47, 16, and resolutions 21, 16, 22, 16, 23, 16, 24, 16, 25, 16, 26, 16, and 27, 16.
Please call the roll.
Bills 3416, 3516, 3616, 3716, 3816, 3916, 41, 16, 42, 16, 44, 16, 45, 16, 46, 16, 47, 16, and resolutions 21, 16, 22, 16, 23, 16, 24, 16, 25, 16, 26, 16, and 27, 16. Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Please read the bills for introduction and first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 4816, 4916, 5016, 5116, 5216, 5316, 5416, 5516, 5516, 5716, 5816, 5816, 5916, 6016, and 6116, first reading.
Report 1716 is a request from the Rock Quarry Road Scenic Roadway Stakeholder Advisory Group. It's a 12-member group. They are recommending to the council that we drop the membership from 12 to 11. That's their resignation. They've had a that's a recommendation. They've had a resignation with it, and I see it seems to be balanced. I see no reason not to accept their recommendation. If there is agreement, I'll need a motion to allow the Rock Quarry Road Scenic Roadway, you say it best, stakeholder advisor group to remain at 11 minutes, 11 members.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Report 18-16 is a report on zoning for tennis bubbles. It came out of a request from Country Club Missouri, who wants to put a bubble over their two tennis courts. And your recommendation is that it's not necessary.
The commission is recommending that we go no further with drafting an ordinance. They feel that that use could be accommodated in a commercial district or some combination of districts other than single family residential.
Right. The point is you can't have a tennis club in R1.
We only allow outdoor tennis clubs and some related recreational uses by conditional use in R1, which means the Board of Adjustment would consider them case by case.
Is Country Club Missouri R1?
Pardon?
Is Country Club Missouri R1?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So how will they put a bubble over their courts?
They won't be able to. It's not an allowed use. The indoor aspect of it is not an allowed use. The tennis courts, of course, already exist, so They can hold lessons there, but there were some concerns about the appropriateness of these dome-type structures in an R1 district.
Any comments? We can either accept the P&Z recommendation, or we could produce an ordinance to change the recommendation.
Well, Just one comment, and that is, I think that the Planning and Zoning Commission was quite clear in their unanimous decision that this might have some impact in residential areas, the surrounding areas, for R1 zoning. I guess there. I understand the idea behind some of these. I'm not opposed to tennis, but I love tennis. By that, for all practical, I would love to have a place to play in the winter. But I think that there is an interface in residential areas that may be problematic for some of their neighbors. And I'm willing to concur with the opinion of the Planning and Zoning Commission in this case.
Well, that would require no action as I see it. Does anybody have any recommendations? If not, we'll move to the next report, which is the information report on the Citizens Police Review Board, and any report that's required to the City Council. As I said, it's informational, very detailed. It's an excellent report. As I look at this report, I focus on the five appeals the board got from citizens, and three of the five appeals the board agreed with the police chief's decision. One of them was not filed in a timely report, and there was one appeal that the board referred back to the police chief for investigation. And I presume if it comes back, they may recommend it go to mediation, so that one is still in limbo. As I look at this report, first of all, it has an excellent history of the formation of the Citizens Police Review Board. It's a very useful resource. And I view this as a positive report. It tells me that the Oversight Board, who is watching the public safety here, this is a pretty good report, I think. I think it validates the good work of our public safety officers in general, and I think the Citizens Police Review Board is certainly fulfilling its mission and is meeting its promise.
But can I just make a comment, and that is I concur with the mayor. I think it is a good report. I was around when the Citizens Police Review Board was established. Rex Campbell was the chair of that group. I think they've done yeoman's work in the meanwhile, and I want to put in a plug for their emphasis about Nicole training for some of the members of this group. I think that's terribly important, professional development, particularly on this kind of level, and I think it bears fruit when it comes to the efficiency and judgment that these folks have with respect to some of these issues that come before them. So I think it's a great report, and I really appreciate it.
And I'll add to this as well. I, too, was on the City Council when the Citizens Police Review Board was formed, and we went through many months of having a conversation as to whether or not this was needed. And I think this is a great example of the process working for people who feel that they haven't had their voices heard. Irrespective of what the outcome would be, I think that it's a testament that after an entire year, we have only five incidents that raise to the level of wanting to challenge a decision and go to the Citizens Review Board. And so, especially when we look at, I think we heard a report that use of force was up, even though crime was down, I think that's even a stronger testament that only five cases were brought forward to the Citizens Review Board. So I commend them for their work. I think that they are doing a great job in our community and trying to bridge that trust gap and bringing accountability to the police department and giving citizens an extra additional ability to have their grievances heard. So I think this is a great report, and I appreciate the hard work that commission does.
Any other comments? Report 20 is an annual report from the Human Rights Commission, an informational report. Well documented. I think there are 14 complaints that they document. I think from what made the papers this weekend were the three complaints on the Ban the Box ordinance. Two of which appear to be valid complaints. A third one apparently was from an organization that is required by statute to do it the way they did it. So, again, excellent report. I have no more comments about it. Anybody else?
I'm pleased with how Ban the Box, just as we suspected, people are complying. I know people who have gotten interviews that didn't used to get interviews. It's changing the facts on the ground. It's giving people a chance to offer evidence of rehabilitation. And I think it's making our community safer. So appreciate the unanimous support of council and those of us who went forward into lobbying the state to protect our rights to determine how we're going to do these things in Columbia. And I haven't, it seems that the economy still continues to do well. It hasn't brought an end to the business community in Columbia.
The next report is a transfer funds summary, informational. Are there any questions or comments of staff? We'll go to general comments by the public. I'll yield 3 minutes to anyone from the public who wants to speak about any topic.
Good evening. My name is Pat Fowler. I live at 606 North 6th Street, and I am a member of the newly formed steering committee for the Community Land Trust, and I wanted to make a couple of comments. We met with Mr. Brown earlier today, and I heard his comments to you during the council work session, and he talked about leveraging public investment. And I wanted to tell you that I am the beneficiary of a very similar public investment going back to the first 20-some years of my life when I lived in Greenbelt, Maryland. Greenbelt is a cooperative community. While the vocabulary is different, the qualities of their housing, their affordable housing, is very similar to the form and structure and process that he described for you this evening. So Greenbelt was formed in 1937. It's a New Deal program that came out of the Depression. In 1952, the government decided they no longer wanted to own those homes in the land, and Greenbelters came together and formed a cooperative, and they took ownership of 1,600 units. There were three different styles at different price points. My mom bought the least expensive in 1965 for $6,000. She was a newly divorced mother of three children. She upgraded a couple years later for $11,000 to a three-bedroom brick townhouse. And when she passed in 1985, we sold her home for $50,000. It appreciated in value, but there were controls so that it remained affordable. And to my delight, my high school art teacher, a newly widowed father of a small child, bought our home. Today, I went online to see how much Greenbelt houses cost. And for the low-end one-bedroom to the upper end, they range between $65,000 and $169,000. You'll remember, perhaps, if you've been to Washington, D.C., that Metrorail arrived, and there's a Metrorail station in Greenbelt, which makes Greenbelt real estate much more popular with people who work downtown in D.C. The other surrounding homes are in the neighborhood of $400,000. So it works. One of the things that I learned growing up there was that community involvement was expected and not suggested. I am the beneficiary of such public investment. My brother and sister and I each own our own homes, despite our modest income, and we are each college graduates. I am delighted to be a part of the steering committee. I am very much appreciative of Mr. Trapp's sponsorship of our work, and I look forward to working closely with you as we explore the possibilities, and there are wonderful possibilities for our community. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions for you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. I have a question for you about your historic preservation work.
Yes.
What's happening with the salvage of the James condominium?
Yes. Thanks to Ms. Peters, who put me in touch with the owner. We have experienced really unprecedented cooperation from the owner. And we are planning, I admit, an ambitious salvage of the 21 units inside the James, beginning on Saturday, March 19th, and continuing perhaps nonstop through the weekend. There are some real treasures there, and it is our hope to take a selected number of those and reinstall them downtown in historic structures to create a living museum of the pieces that were handcrafted and hand-installed in 1903. And so I encourage you all, if you have a couple hours, we'd love to have your help. We'd love to have you talk it up. Send us good vibes. Again, it's a really ambitious undertaking, and let's hope it doesn't rain that weekend. And thank you again for bringing me and the owner together so that we could talk about those possibilities.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I want to hand you so you can pass around. This is a brochure for Greenbelt Homes Incorporated, so you can see sort of the, it's a different concept, but it's very much the same basic concept of what we're talking about here.
Anyone else?
Good evening, Council. I just wanted to quickly say, Tracy Wilson, Klee Camp, 2905 Greenbrier. I wanted to say thank you to Mike Mathis for taking the time to meet with Race Matters last week. I thought that was good. I hope we'll get to meet with you more. And I'm very appreciative of John Clark coming and talking about community policing and reiterating this idea that the philosophy of community policing is where we're looking for consensus about. It's not the number of officers, it's not the budget, it's not that. It's about shared governance, about how we think policing should look for the city. That's the easy part, I think. And I think if we can do that and build consensus around that, I think it's easier to do a revenue bond to support more officers. It also helps if everybody's on the same page about what policing means to them. And it's also really helpful if what we want done for policing comes from us and not from an authoritarian dominant narrative, if you will. I also think that it's really important as we move forward that we find ways to make space for people in the community, because the world is changing, to have different ideas about how we do government differently and how we share governance and how we share ideas. It's very hard because we all like to do things the way we always do them. I know this as a parent because I think I know something, and I find out from my kids I don't know something. So as a learner, I think when we're working with people, we have to make room to accept new ideas and new ways of doing things. But I'm very thankful for your time, and I hope that we continue meeting and working together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Lane. Tonight I'm wanting to present a question. Maybe you all can answer it in your all's discussion. You have recently annexed the Midway truck stop and possibly beyond. Have not?
We have not.
Okay. That my question would have been, when's this all going to take place? So it has not been effective yet. I noticed this evening we're on the discussion of legal matters, needing officers. It's starting to get a little too close to home. You hear my address as being range line, and you hear shootings on range line just past evening. You had groups from the northern, what is directly behind Mosier's on range line. For some reason, we're starting to build more and more communities of violence. We've always known of the Demerit Drive. We have the range line. And now this is so important that I don't, might be your territory, I'm not sure, Scott or Carl, but 28 years ago, when you've heard me speak of Habitat for Humanity repeatedly, our first house is setting on Boyd Lane, located on the east end of town. Boyd intersects with Lamp Lane. Lamp Lane was in the news. Well, the individual was caught there and arrested, but why did he go there? This is very important to me. I understood there were shots fired in the Boyd area last year. When things are unsolved, we might need to be looking into what really is going on. Do we need more lighting in these streets? I actually have a great aunt living in that general area. I also have the mother and twin sister of the first woman I worked with homelessness. This could go back 10 years. The mother is currently trying to spend larger money dollars to improve their home, yet this violence is coming to be at her back door. There are so many people that want to do good in this country, in this city. Please look into the matter of how much enforcement do we need in spotted areas of higher violence. Thank you.
Anyone else? We'll move to council comments. Councilman Ruffin, you want to start?
Good.
I've already said a lot, but I still got a few more things to say. The Building and Construction Codes Commission presentation by Rhonda Carlson, just to give, you know, I appreciate all the hard work that the Building Construction Codes Commission puts into looking at specifically energy code revisions, which is where often where the controversy lies. But, you know, it's City Council is the elected leadership of the city. We stand for election based upon a set of principles, and for many of us, that is energy conservation. And their whole method of analysis has been to take all of their technological expertise and tease out every energy efficiency and does it have a 10-year payback, and reject those that don't. The method, if they want their recommendations to be accepted by council, the method of analysis they need to look at is, does these suites of energy efficiency standards pay back as a whole? The ones that have longer paybacks are supported by the ones that have the shorter paybacks. If you just cherry pick out the easy stuff, then that's ensuring that you're never going to make the energy efficiency standards. That is always going to drive greater energy costs, greater efficiency. There is an upper level of investment in constructing the home, and I understand why people who are in the business of building homes and businesses want to reduce those costs, because they can reduce the sales cost and people can add more square footage, as has been the long American tradition. But the person who buys the home and holds that, an average tenure is 7 years, you're going to gain that back. And you're also, you know, energy efficiency is building for permanence, because we're just building better structures. The extra insulation required under the energy codes moving us to 2x6 versus 2x4 construction. So we're building stronger, more sturdy, environmentally conscious homes. We're cutting down, we're taking that cost of the stress on the utility and putting it upon the new cost of construction versus all of us socializing that cost who pay for utility expansion. So point number one. Point number two, the last meeting of the update meetings as far as the Mayor's Task Force on Community Violence will be this Friday from 5:30 to 7 in conference room 1A, so that we can sit in a circle, and in that there won't be any presentations. We've done kind of presented on what we've done as far as implementation of all of the recommendations. This will be really a planning meeting to listen to citizen voices to come up with what's an ongoing process of implementation and monitoring going forward. So that will be going on Friday, March 11th.
Mr. Nezer?
I have a couple of things some constituents have asked me about, and one seems to be repeated several times here as of late, and people inquiring as to the progress of the Highway 63 connector over by the Walmart over on Conley Road. I know that was a topic that was years ago, and I know the... Okay, good, because I don't think I've read anything, and I haven't, so I was going to ask for a report on if staff knows where that is in.
Yeah, well, it got stuck in. I mean, that was in the last election, that was the thing that was supposed to be in play, if you will, and there was and that connector has always been planned. That was a TDD that was there, and I think Craig Van Matry was in charge of that TD and lots of others, and there was even exhaustive negotiations with the golf course, the country club golf course there, and they moved some of their golf holes and so on and so forth. Apparently, that was the work on that was suspended because of some difficulties with the owner and purchasers of the property and so on and so forth as those negotiations. So, as I understood it, and the staff can correct me if I'm wrong, that connector, if you will, is still in the kind of in the planning stages, but has the work activity on it has been suspended.
Okay, thank you, because I've had several people over the past
it's
month.
It's desperately needed, but I wish that...
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I think that was part of their concern.
That's the connector from Business Loop?
To the highway, to I-70. To I-70 to Conley Road.
So that people don't have to merge onto I-70 get off and have that backup. Okay.
That's right.
And then I have two other issues. Another one is something that I've brought up a couple of times, and that is the continued standing water and backup of stormwater on Nifong between Monterey Drive and Santiago. There is still standing water from the last rainfall. I have said that ducks in the spring and summer actually nest there because there is a continual pond of water next to Nifong Boulevard. And so I would like it. I know we're going to have some road construction, and when we put in traffic signals at Peachtree, but that area of the shoulder desperately needs some kind of trenching to clear a path for the water to move. Over the course of time, it's meanders, trash builds up, and it has formed little pools of standing water. It's very close to people and their homes. And now we're hearing problems of the Zika virus with mosquitoes, and this is just nothing but a constant pool of stagnant water as we get into the spring and summer that needs to be addressed. So if we could get a piece of equipment out there just to trench that so that it's a clear path for the water to go from point A to point B would be much appreciated.
Not by the ducks.
Not by the ducks, I know.
You,
but
you don't want to designate it a conservation area, I take it.
That could happen. And I drive by there, and I see the poor ducks, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to get hit by a car. So I'd really like to move the ducks along. So just going from ducks to dogs, I've had a constituent. This is a very strange request. I guess people are walking their dogs along Green Meadows, along the apartments that are near Murray's and in that area. And apparently they are conscientious enough to pick up after their dogs, but then decide to throw the bags of waste on the city streets.
Yes.
Yes. And I drove by there this evening, and there were three bags of that. And I thought,
I don't know what their problem is.
I don't either. So I don't know what the problem is, but it certainly is not a healthy situation, especially for people with children.
They're waiting for garbage to happen.
And so, you know, the strange things we talk about at city council. So I don't know if we need to put some kinds of signs that put up, you know, please pick up after your dog, put your dog waste in an appropriate receptacle. I mean, it's ridiculous. You have to tell adults to do these types of things. But I hear all over the country this is becoming a problem with such. So yeah. Give something lighthearted for staff to look into about the bags deposited along Green Meadows.
Scala.
Yeah, that is really funny. I dealt with I don't mean funny. It's funny in my head. Let me explain why it's funny. Because I dealt with rhesus monkeys for many, many years in research, and they even know what to do with their waste matter, and you can hose them down. You can't do that.
Can I hose down my neighbor?
You hose them. All right. Well, I beg your indulgence here. I only have eight items, but it's early yet. But let me start with the community policing thing, since that's something that Tracy brought up. You know, I've had a couple of campaigns now, and one of the most seminal articles that I've ever read, and I think I shared this with Race Matters, was an article from Governing Magazine. It was Governing July 2012. It was called Let's Talk, and it was all about Kathy Lanier and the Washington, D.C. Police Department and a real philosophy of community policing. You know, they have their own police needs and personnel needs and so on and so forth. That was an eye-opener. It's one of many, many articles. And I would, once again, Governing July 2012 is well worth reading, and I can supply it to anybody who wants to see it. Another thing that has to do with crime, and it kind of fits into another question that I had. You mentioned Demerit Drive. Demerit Drive is a county area that is known for having problems, and it's spillover crime into the city on Lake of the Woods, and then they go up to Kelsey, and they cut over to Rice Road, and then they and so on and so and over to Boyd, and all the rest of those areas. Fortunately, I think we have, and I wanted to ask the city manager about this, because when we decided to put a police station or a facility on the north side in Mr. Trapp's neighborhood, one of the concessions, if you want to call it that, was to try and arrange for two of those community police officers to at least have a substation on the east side, right there where there is the intersection between the city and the county, so that there is a presence there and avails enables those police officers of a much quicker response time to those areas and cuts Demerit Drive off from that area. I think that's coming. It can't come soon enough. It's a very popular topic when I knock on doors. I will tell you that.
We have looked at space, and we're working on it.
Yeah. And this reminds me, all of these things are kind of coincidental. Boyd Lane. I was out canvassing the other day, and I mentioned this to the mayor just recently, on Boyd Lane, actually. And I was knocking on doors, and two things happened to me. One is I went up to this gentleman who was in a garage, and I was giving him my campaign pitch. And he seemed a little nervous at the time, but we struck up a conversation, and he was very receptive. We were talking about the police substation and so on, some of the improvements in the area and how we might improve things in the area. He eventually took a yard sign. I was talking to his wife and so on and so forth. He said, but before I left, he told me, he said, boy, you know, you kind of made me nervous. I was coming up here. I had CCW. Now, I don't want to get shot, you know, knocking on doors. And there was another fellow that pulled up with a white pickup truck, and he said he was talking to the wife of this woman who had this CCW permit, and he said, have you seen some guy coming around doors here, knocking on doors? And he didn't see me. I was behind the car. And I said, that's me. I'm your city councilman here. I was trying to knock on doors for this campaign. She said, you scared my mother. And I'm saying, what in the world? I had knocked on the door. His mother, who was elderly, was terrified that somebody was in this neighborhood, apparently. I left, but I said, I'll leave the literature at your door, and I left. And he said, you can come visit me, but he was worried about this whole. That's what's going on in Boyd Lane, and it's one of the reasons why we need some of this relief with that police substation. So I would appreciate as much post-haste movement on that. There are some open vacancies in some of that commercial area for lease. I just hope we can get that done pretty soon. Okay, you mentioned building codes, Mike. It's interesting. I was chair of EEC for many, many years, and that's when some of this adversarial relationship started to occur between the EEC and the Building Codes Commission. And they do go through a heck of a lot of work, and they review these things every 3 years. But it was even the city staff and Public Works, John from Public Works was talking about how we needed to upgrade some of these international building codes, and that's where some of the rub came. And they do work together to some degree, but there is also some adversarial kinds of feelings, so they don't always work things out. I think it's a good idea for those groups to work together as much as possible. Those are our boards and commissions, and they both have a information stream to us where they're very valuable. But we need to work out those differences in the best interest of what we think is in the best interest of the community. And then just, I think, three announcements, actually. There is going to be a Keene Street and I-70 Drive Southeast roundabout discussion information session at City Hall on the 15th of March. That's coming up. It's on a Tuesday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at City Hall here. That's about a new proposed concept for roundabout at Keene and I-70 Drive Southeast, right near the new Mosier store, the Patricia store that turned into a Mosier store, because Keene has classically had lots of traffic issues there. There's a Bett and Stevens overlay meeting at City Hall on Wednesday, the 16th of this month, from 6 to 7 p.m. to talk about potentially strengthening the Bett and Stevens urban overlay in terms of how they interface with some of what that community considers some challenges with regard to development and maintaining the neighborhood. And finally, there's a tiny home meeting and this gets into the issue of the needs and Mike and some of
it's open to the public.
It is, well, I think it is. I don't know how what big a room it's going to be, but I'll give you.
I think it's in 5D, which is.
I think that's right, but that's right. And this addresses the needs. You have on many cases talked about, you know, the needs of the homeless, and there's no question about it. And a lot of them are relatively temporary needs for overnight stuff and cold weather and so on and so forth. This is one of those areas that there nationwide there has been some interest in just little lockable spaces that don't necessarily have their own plumbing and everything other. They could. It's usually electricity. It's a lockable space, so people have some security. In conjunction with some private public partnerships, sometimes a church that has facilities for showers and toilets and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. We're just starting to talk about it now, and this is the first of those meetings. There's supposed to be an advocate that is going to be an expert to talk about some of these things. That's on Thursday. Oops, let me get rid of this thing. Thursday the 10th from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. That is here in 5D. I think that's right. Yeah, I think that so. Was the – and, you know, this also fits into the whole thing about – the great work, and I ran into Phil Steinhaus at one of these just before this meeting, talking about Patriot Place, if I had seen Patriot Place. And that's an attempt at making things better for veterans homelessness, and it's proceeding very well. It's a beautiful place, and I think that's another thing that fits into the needs that we have. And one more thing, just one. And that is, I had a request some time ago. The mayor and the city manager and I sat with a consultant over at Ready and talked to our consultant about fiber and how to deal with fiber. And there and that's part of the whole infrastructure piece, if you will, that we have in our community as well. There's a growing recognition that some communities are moving ahead a little faster than we are. We have some competition with some of the fiber providers right now, and that's an interface. But I would at least like a report to let us know, let the council know where we are in these negotiations, what that looks like, how we can maybe move forward. Perhaps we need some sort of legislation for an ordinance to establish a commission that might help with this. I don't know. That's on down the road. But at this point, I would just like a report to find out where we are with respect to that consultant's report and any difficulties we may have encountered with some of the private sector in terms of how we deal with that. That's all that I have. Thank you.
Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, I have four things. First of all, another pedestrian was killed this morning, and we've had a gap of a year or so, but there were four pedestrian deaths in late 2014, early 2015, and another one today. The Pedestrian Safety Task Force, which you set up, Bob, has almost completed its work. I want to thank Clyde and Mitch Scove from the staff for all that they've done. Our recommendations are virtually finalized. We're holding two meetings next week, and the report will be on the April 4th agenda. The first recommendation is likely to be to adopt a Vision Zero policy for the city, something that many cities around the United States are doing. That means two things. Firstly, safety is the number one priority in designing and implementing and operating transportation systems. And secondly, that traffic deaths and serious injuries are preventable and unacceptable. And then from that point forward, we review the systems we have and make appropriate changes and design new systems. And if that means that when a pedestrian's crossing at Stadium and Monk Drive, the traffic is not allowed to turn left on a flashing yellow, if we're consistent with safety being the number one priority and traffic deaths and serious injuries being preventable and unacceptable, that's the way we design the system. Secondly, community policing. Thanks very much to John Clark earlier, to Tracy, to your comments, Carl. I think we have to be more vocal about this. Mike, you and I have discussed several times. I've asked that the chief develop a strong vision for community policing as a prelude. I think we all know we do need more officers on our police force, and we're going to need to go to the voters for that, and we're going to need to develop a vision. But I'm going to change my request now. Rather than ask the chief to do it all on his own, I think that what John said and what Tracy said and what Carl said is exactly right. We have to have a community process for this. Community policing starts with an authentic community engagement that allows everybody to come forward and explain how they would like to see public safety operated in their community. So I throw that just into your court, but I urge some kind of a plan for a you know, I think John's right. I think it has to be at least 12 months visioning process. We look at Columbia Imagined and what came out of that and how that's guiding us. I had another example in mind that's just escaped, but engaged community processes lead to good policies and practices and programs, and our police department desperately needs that with low staffing, low morale, race and equity issues impacting policing. So that is my call on policing. Three, there are two quite encouraging development processes going on in the Fourth Ward right now, which I am quite excited about, and the possibility of really creating a kind of a model process for negotiation between landowners and developers on the one hand and adjacent neighbors and property owners on the other. One is, if it comes forward, would be an annexation and rezoning out west of Scott Boulevard on some land between as far out as the city goes right now and the Perchy Creek. It is within the urban service area. There was a very good meeting last Thursday with many representatives of adjacent neighborhoods present and various aspects of the development being negotiated, including traffic flow, density, and preservation of an Indian burial site and protection of sinkholes and other fragile ecosystems. And the other one is much closer in, at Ridgemont and College Park, where there is the possibility of, instead of an R1 development that fills an 11-acre tract, half of that tract being preserved as public open space, more clustered development of smaller houses on the other half that may end up being more acceptable to the adjacent residents and also acceptable and preferred by the developer. And what I'm just really happy about, though, is that there's been a very good transparent discussion in both of those cases that seems to be have mutual respect and good communication and could come up with outcomes where everybody is satisfied, if not happy. And then my final thing, I just want to let maybe you mostly know, Mike, but everybody as well. I will be not here on April the 18th, which is about three council meetings for now. Now, I may not be on the council on April the 18th, depending on how the election goes on April the 5th. But even if I am reelected, I will be out of the country on April the 18th. And just wanted to let you all know about that. Thanks.
The Sixth Ward seems fairly happy. I have nothing to report.
Well, and before we go, Mr. Thomas just brought up the issue of the community dialogue with the police department, and I think after hearing some testimony, I'm also in concurrence that I think we need to maybe look at an outside facilitator to come in and handle that process, to be the neutral third party to facilitate this going forward. So I just wanted to add that in, because on top of what you said, because I think having that independent person coming in would be most beneficial.
I endorse that, too.